All right. I'd like to call the meeting of the Wasaga Outdoor Heritage Council back to order. Senator Ingebrigtsen is in committee, he has a bill up, but Bob did talk to him, he said plan to move ahead and he'll be here as soon as he can, but I don't want to put words in your mouth, Bob.
Does he trust the council?
Trust the whole, that's great.
Ready.
Okay. So I'd like to pick it up where we left off. Again, we're still working on the first page. We've made a number of changes to the allocation to these 15 projects. I guess I have a question for those legislative folks. Is it appropriate, or can the chair actually suggest a change in one of these, or does the chair not have that?
I'd say, Mr. Chair, you probably wouldn't want to make an official motion from the chair, but you can sure suggest all you want.
Well, maybe I will hand the gavel to the vice chair. I would like to. One of the things that I think this council really needs to be supportive of, which they are, is the amount of money that we are allocating to restore and enhance those wildlife management areas that we already have. You know, there are a lot of state wildlife management areas that I know I've personally been to that could use a lot of work, and I'm referring to P13, which is the Accelerated Prairie Grassland Management. And the request that the department had was $1.7 million, and the average allocation was 1.2, and I would certainly like to see this council taking a very strong position saying that we need to take care of the asset that we have, as well as any new assets we might acquire through fee simple or permanent easement. So my motion would be to increase the funding of P13 by $500,000 to the amount that was requested of the department.
Mr. Chair, maybe on your behalf, someone else would want to make that motion.
I passed the gavel to Jim.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't see that.
So I'll move that.
Do I have a motion? Any discussion? Oh, I'm sorry.
I think the non-chair right now brings up a good point, because when you're looking at the total allocation on the spreadsheet, most of it's acquisition. And we have a lot of testimony in the legislature about our own land that we already own, and the restoration work needs to be done on the lands. And the job multiplier that occurs with restoration, working with local contractors, and they're buying local feed, and they're buying local nurseries. So, you know, we don't have many other places to take the 500 from, but I think that from all of these, this allocation as it is right now is very heavy on acquisition and very light on restoration. And the constitutional language is protect, enhance, and restore. So I'm supportive of adding the 500 in. I think for budgeting, it's probably wise to take it from somewhere else. But we have for that one.
Any other discussion? Okay, I guess we'll just take the vote on this. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Okay.
Could we hear from Ducks Unlimited and the Green Corridor Legacy Program on their comments on the two components?
So, representatives from the P3 and W10. So Brad,
yep.
And John,
in particular order.
Go ahead, John.
Good afternoon, John. Again, welcome.
Thanks.
You want to grab a chair?
Sure.
Just figure the average allocation from the exercise we've gone through is about half of what you would ask for. So let's you know what that 2.588 or 283 is compared to what the original request was.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanson, it would fund a portion of the shallow lake projects we propose. Quite frankly, we can propose the rest of those in the future and do those incrementally over time. It's not a crisis. The 2.5, 3 million is a generous allocation, and will keep us plenty busy for the following year on shallow lake enhancement.
And how, Mr. Chair, how much acquisitions involved there, and how much restoration?
None of the acquisition nor the conservation easements were included in that. As far as I, the way I'm reading this, that would just be for the enhancement work. So that would just be shallow lake enhancement projects, engineering projects, constructing them. We had a separate request of $1.6 million for conservation easements and $900,000 for acquisition.
John, would you like to be able to use some of the money that we have allocated to you towards easements? Would that help you? And
I think it would, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Cox. That would be great. We'd love to see some of the conservation easement work funded so that we could have a balanced program where we're doing both enhancement work and shoreline protection around some of these key shallow lakes. That's our concern, that we're trying to do both the enhancement and the protection.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chair, on that point then, perhaps whatever the language is that we ultimately, if we ultimately decide to support this proposal, might want to acknowledge that mix. That's Jim.
Should we make a motion to that? I think we want to.
Yeah, I do. I'm trying to think what the motion is.
Other than whatever John just said.
I just made the point that we need more restoration, and clearly the council looks like they want to go back to more acquisition. Bumping up the number of restorations. So I think the enhancement, I think the 2.5, 2.8 is appropriate. I think we have to prioritize, and if we've got projects we've been working on, doing enhancement is the first step, and we can come back for acquisition later. That's my personal opinion.
Jim? Well, maybe I should make a motion that will allow Ducks and Lemons to use up to $400,000 of the money we're allocating here for easement.
So Jim, where are you referring to?
I'm referring to the W10. The average is 25-28. Mm-hmm. So we're making that appropriation. We're going to allow them to use $400,000 of that appropriation for easement.
And we have a motion then that in the rider language up to $400,000 would be used to acquire permanent conservation easements in conjunction with shallow lake restoration or enhancement.
I would just say I think Rick is right on this, and I'm a huge easement fan, but we got a lot of acquisition in here for easements, and this is a clear opportunity to do a big deal in terms of restoration. And I know you need the easement stuff as well, but I'd love to see you come back to the easement and use all of this for restoration. And so I'm going to vote against it, but not against you.
Any other discussion on that motion? Okay, so the motion, Bill, do you want to just restate so we know exactly what we're...
The motion is to ensure that the rider language allows up to $400,000 in W-10 to be used for easements, maybe used for easements.
In conjunction with shallow lake restoration or enhancement?
Yes.
Any further discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Okay, motion carries. Ellen?
Well, Mr. Chair, I'd like to propose we relook at some of the proposals on this list that were mentioned earlier. It's a little hard for me to know where to prioritize, so I'm going to just maybe bring up, first of all, bring up for discussion, there's three acquisition projects that are similar, they have some similarities. One is the Great River Greening and Oak of San Plain, Oak Savannah Conservation, that's P2, and then there's the there's the Rum River Cedar Creek acquisition, which is P8, and then under the wetlands, there's the Rice Creek Wildlife Conservation Area acquisition project, and I'm trying to prioritize among these three and understand exactly how the land would be used, but it's my understanding, at least in two of them, in the Anoka Sand Plain, that this is an oak savanna. It's a very threatened type of habitat, and this would be for fee and easement, and I think, I'm not quite sure if it would be part of a wildlife refuge or just next to a wildlife refuge, so I'm not 100% sure what
the... So we're looking for some information from this.
Perhaps we should bring them up.
And we do have, I know that Rick asked for two individuals, Ellen, if we could, mm-hmm. could you identify again those projects, because let's take them in
P2,
order.
P2, mm-hmm. and then P8, and I think I'll just focus on those for
okay.
now.
So well, I have those in order. Rick, if you could, I know that you had asked Mr. Cobb to come up and talk about the project that's on the spreadsheet we're working on. This is the Green Corridor Legacy Acquisition P3. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Welcome. Thanks for having us.
Well, pretty much the same question. Comparing, you've got a lower allocation from the exercise we've gone through to develop what you can do with that and how you're going to find.
We'll prioritize the three projects that we proposed in our earlier proposal. We're just going to eliminate one of those projects and reprioritize. We're going to do with less. So,
any other questions for Mr. Cobb?
Maybe be more specific on the project. You'll just eliminate one, or do you have in mind which one is here?
Yeah, we'll limit the 640-acre tract. We'll probably address in some other funding mechanism.
Which leaves then which projects?
Our option B and C.
And those acreages on those?
480 and 100.
Any other questions for Mr. Cobb on the P3 project? Okay, thank you. So, Ellen, getting back, you had would like to hear from someone representing P2, which is not on the sheet we're working on, but it is the Great River Greening project. And then after that, just the P8, the Anoka County Parks and Recreation Department, the Rum River Cedar Creek Acquisition project.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, from a project standpoint, have we concluded, for the most part, the discussions of the vote that got 7 or more votes?
No. I don't think so.
And I guess my understanding was that we were going to continue that until we, for the most part, concluded before we have the discussion of bringing up those that had votes less than 7.
That's correct. Yes, Ellen?
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess I want to know what that means. Does that mean that we're going to... take motions until the money's gone, and then that's if that's where we're headed, then I guess I'd like to know that. Is that what you mean by concluding discussion?
I guess, Mr. Chair, I guess I would say that, continue the discussion until council members have completed whatever discussion they would want to have on those topics.
Well, I guess we could, Mr. Chair, we could call that question and just ask if members have other motions on any of these top 15.
I think that would be appropriate. Rick, up to that point?
On that point, I did want to hear, I think the only one that we haven't discussed mm-hmm. is P4 from U.S. Fish and Wildlife. We had talked about W15, but I would like to hear, I thought I saw it in here earlier, I don't know.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Bob Hanna, I did talk to Mr. Leach, who left when we adjourned before, to say that he indicated to me that he was not available for this afternoon session. He did say, however, though, that he was aware of the amount that we had allocated on an average basis. And he, when I asked him, what would that mean to you, his answer was not too dissimilar to what we've heard already, that it would be, they could use that, it would be at a lower level of effort, but would be appreciative of whatever we're able to give them. So,
and if full funding was allocated, the $2 million that was requested, they could, with the sense of Bob, that they could spend that money, they have the willing...
Yes. The answer they gave to us before on the other projects, would, in this case, they would finish it within the time frame.
So are we looking for any further discussion on this page? These are the projects that have at least seven or more allocations.
Sure.
Yes?
I just wondered if we could just go back now that we were talking about this much, get a kind of a synopsis of where we're at from one down to, I guess, the C-17.
So that's on the screen. So
that's the top issue.
So the first two numbers have not changed. In other words, for the P9 and the W3 have not changed. The third one is fully funded at the amount recommended, $5.6 million. That's the other portion of the Fish and Wildlife Service proposal.
Saving the North.
Yes. And then the AMA, we are now at 5.427 and some change. After that, we have FG-17, which is the Trout Unlimited, which we agreed to fully fund at about just over $2 million. Following that, the one what we just talked about, we haven't done anything to, which is the Fish and Wildlife Service's Tallgrass Prairie Acquisition Program, which is at now 1.583, which is on the spreadsheet. Followed by Pheasants Forever, we are now at the full amount for the acquisition, and that, and there's some language in there that includes restoration as part of that.
Yes.
Let me help you as we go through this. P13, the accelerated prairie and grassland management, we are at the full amount, $1.7 million. And so that's the one we just talked about, restoration and enhancement of the asset that we have. W7, WMA acquisitions, we are at just shy of $3 million, what's indicated on the spreadsheet, $2.9 million. F7, that's the Forest Legacy Project, we're at $20 million for that one. The P3, which is the green corridor, the one Mr. Cobbs was just talking about, we are at the number that is indicated on the spreadsheet, $1.617 million. The Ducks Unlimited, again, we're at the number on the spreadsheet, $2.528 million. Conservation Partners Program, which is at the amount on the spreadsheet, $3.288 million. Lake Superior Steelhead Association is at the amount requested, $320,000, not $500,000. And that is it. So that leaves a balance of about just under $5.7 million of unallocated dollars. David?
Thank you.
I think we do have a cleanup issue to get to round numbers on the aquatic management areas. We're at $940 and we wanted to be at around 1,000, so I would make a motion that we take that up to $5,428,000. And Unlimited is $2,050,060. I would reduce that to $2,050,000 to make it round numbers.
Okay, once more, as we're writing.
The aquatic management areas, I would just increase that by $60, and I would decrease the Trout Unlimited by $60. Leaving the totals where they are, but making them even $1,000 numbers, which seems to make people around here happy.
Go ahead. Do we have that motion to make those two modest changes to the FGW7 and the FGW17? Any further discussion on that?
I don't know.
Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So those changes have been made. Any other changes to this spreadsheet? Scott?
I would like to, in our conversations in the small conservation partners grant, we initially, the small grants committee had come up with a $6 million allocation for that. And as a result of that, we actually split those dollars into a larger, we added a larger category of grants from $125,000 up to the $400,000. And we did that because we thought there was going to be more funds available. I would like to make a motion to increase the Conservation Partners Program to $4 million.
So motion is to increase the allocation from $3.288 million to $4 million. Any discussion on that motion?
I would just say, I think that this is our first year, we don't have enough money, and I think we ought to leave it where it is.
Mr. Chair, in the original selling of the program, the Conservation Partners was a very, very important and significant factor as far as the vote and approval of this program. So I think adequate funding to raise that to $4 million, I think, would be justifiable because we are going to get continual emphasis in that area, and I think some of the other smaller projects that are already identified could fit in there quite nicely. So I would go along with Scott's proposal.
Okay. Further thoughts or comments on that proposal? Okay, hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
No.
The motion carries.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
One question on P&I, and maybe we could have Mr. Peterson answer this for the DNR.
We're going back to the lake, I'm sorry.
The very first
the
one.
The third, the Accelerated Grassland WMA Acquisition. That would be Mr. Simons.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Simons. I was under the impression, Mr. Simons, that three of these projects in this WMA Acquisition were in the metro area looking at being fair in the geographical distribution, if we didn't fund that fully, would we be able to accomplish those three projects in the metro area? One of them is very significant with the Capable Partners program. Maybe you could expand on that just to read that.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Simon. Mr. Chair, Mr. Bench, you're correct. I'm just looking through our acquisition priority list here. It depends on, of course, what you describe as metro area. But I'll just read through a couple of them so you get a sense for what we've got in process right now. We've got appraisals in the works, so that these are what we are calling our shovel-ready acquisitions. We have a project in Itanda County called the Beckman Homestead. That's the one that you referred to, Mr. Benson. That's a WMA that we have a cooperative wildlife management area with the county on, and we have a really extensive and very successful disability hunts and youth hunts on that unit. It's really, it's one of our highest priority acquisitions that we've got on our list. We have an acquisition in Washington County at the Paul Hugo Farms WMA. We have two acquisitions in Wright County. We have an acquisition in Anoka County. We have an acquisition in Chisago. We have two acquisitions in Dakota County and another one in Chisago County. So those are the acquisitions that are in or near metro areas that are in our top 15 right now.
Thank you. That's very helpful. Any further questions? Thank you, Mr. Simon. Are there any additional changes that we want to make to this spreadsheet? If you look at the screen, we have just south of $5 million that is not allocated yet. Darby?
Yeah, there are a couple of items, I think. I'm not sure whether we have resolved the RIM amount. We talked about it. been told that it's $9,500,000 gets us the full federal return. There's also been interest expressed in P4, which is an acquisition that might be bumped up. But I'm getting nervous because I think we're still yet to talk about projects that are that are off this list, I guess, is what I'm saying. And I'm looking up at that. I can't see that chart very well. I wish I were on the other side of the room, but it looks to me like we're sitting at about
just under $5 million.
I guess I'm nervous about both of the projects that I just talked about because I see them potentially eliminating some choices that we may want to have off the next list.
Any further discussion, Rick, on this list?
I think this list is very heavy on acquisition and very light on restoration.
Any further comments?
And, Mr. Chair, there will be filth consequences for these acquisitions. So there isn't the money to cover those filth consequences.
Further comments or discussion? Yes,
Mr. Chair.
Wayne?
Granted, there's going to be more money put towards acquisition because acquisition is a lot more expensive than it is to do a restoration. If a lot of these projects were intended to be put on the board and slate now because they may not be available next year, by acquiring them this year, then there's enough possibility to do a lot more restoration work hopefully next year. That's why I don't have a problem with it.
Mr. Chair, there's not a lot of land moving right now. The capacity is weakened because of the credit system. The demands are not as heavy as they were. So I think some of the unique what we're supposed to do is look at unique properties that are in the statewide conservation plan for acquisition, not just acquisition. And so I think doing restoration, which is what we have right now, if we put more into that rather than putting more on the state road.
Question, Mr. Chair, just as a clarification item, TILT payments are received from two sources, federal and state. How is the federal TILT payment allocated? Maybe this is something that Mr. Lyons could answer on the RIM and WRP lands. I don't know where that money comes from. State, yes, but where does the federal supporting dollars come from?
So just to clarify, if it's a conservation easement, there is no TILT payment. It would just be for fee title acquisition.
Right, for acquisition.
So in that case, for any of the WRP RIM, there would be no TILT payment, no TILT liability. As would the state's liability for any federal WPA acquisitions or prairie grassland would not have a
state.
Strictly the state. That would strictly be a federal TILT responsibility. Any further discussion on this sheet? So again, we have just under $5 million left, but I want to make sure we're in agreement about the allocation for these before we move on and talk about the remaining. If not, I guess I would entertain a motion to adopt this spreadsheet at this point in time with these allocations, and then we can move beyond this spreadsheet to start talking about additional projects.
I would so move.
Okay, we have a motion then to adopt the spreadsheet that includes these 14 projects now because P17 has been rolled in as part of the P7 appropriation. And the amount that we've allocated, Rick?
A
roll call vote has been requested. Is there any further discussion on this allocation? Okay, hearing none. Bill?
Senator Anderson?
Pass.
Counselor Finch?
Yes.
Counselor Cox?
Yes.
Counselor Ingram?
Yes.
Representative Gunther?
Yes.
Representative Hanson?
No.
Councilor Hartwell?
Yes.
Senator Ingebrigtsen is absent. Councilor Nelson?
Yes.
Councilor Rall?
Yes.
Councilor Schroeder?
Aye.
And the chair?
Aye.
I honestly would prefer to pass. I'm not quite ready to pass judgment.
So it is 9-1 with one absence and one pass.
Okay, so we have this spreadsheet adopted, and now we can move on. We have, again, just under $5 million of unallocated money, and we have a number of other projects, obviously almost 100. Now, Bob, did you have your hand up?
Yeah, Mr. Chair. If it's okay with you, I'd like a handout. I anticipated that we'd have probably a little bit more than this, so I kind of went through and came up with a proposal for consideration by the council at this point.
So, Bob, you have copies of that?
I do.
Oh, you're great.
I do. I'll just grab it. So, and I just, this is a starting point, members, not, certainly not an ending point. What I'm handing out is a list of projects that were, did not receive 7 votes. And Mr. Chair, this is this is just a starting point. I'm trying to explain generally what I have in mind here. We had 6 projects that received 6 votes, and I'm suggesting that we consider 3 of them, the Minnesota Land Trust, the Minnesota Valley Trust, and the Friends of the Minnesota Valley. One of the votes that received 6 votes that is not on this list is the Veterans Forever Prairie Heritage Enhancement Fund. The other one, two are the Minnesota Waterfowl Association, which is $329,000. I thought that might be considered under the small grant program at a point in time later. And the other one was also Pheasants Forever, the Public Land Wetland Restoration and Enhancement at $163,000. Again, that might be worthy of a small grant program. So the remaining, the 3 that are on this list are the ones that I think are worthy of consideration. And then I went through and pulled out a number of other projects. Now, the amount here is 5.783. We have just under $5 million, so we have to, somewhere we need to do some haircuts. I'm not sure if it would be on this list or if we go back to the list of 14 now, but I throw this out for consideration and for members to review. This is a mix of acquisition and protection activity. For example, Lake Rebecca is on here. This is one that Darby had mentioned earlier this morning. This is an enhancement work to a lake out in western Hennepin County. So, Mr. Chair, that's a...
Is that a motion, Bob?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'll move this list with an expectation of modification.
Yeah. So we have a motion then to adopt this list of projects. Obviously, we'd have to work on the amounts, but at least we have a list of some 10 or 11 projects for consideration. Any discussion? Members, take a look at this. Yes, Les?
It's a good start, but why don't we look at, just a suggestion that we look at the next top priority items, which are all the sixes, and keep working our way down the list, and take it in small bites rather than a whole mouthful. We might choke at it. There's 2 definitely that stand out, W13 and W14, acquisition and enhancement, Minnesota River Valley. Look like 2 great projects. What I'm saying is, should we systematically go down through the list and start looking at top priorities and work down? I don't know if that's what you did or not, or if you just jumped through the list and picked these out.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I started off with looking up the top 6 and then used a little bit of discretion on the remainder. So it's a combination of both.
lot of information. Ellen?
Well, Mr. Chair, I have some other projects I'd like to consider. And so I'm not sure, I suspect members are going to want to go through this project by project rather than as some package proposal, most likely. So perhaps we should just add some other ideas to the list and then go through them.
Okay. So we have a motion on the table then to adopt this, or to adopt this list with this amount. So what are you proposing, Ellen?
Well, you know, I don't know if Bob wants to just take a vote on that, on the whole package, up or down. I sort of didn't hear him saying that. I think he was suggesting it's a starting point for discussion.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, that's right, the starting point out. I'm trying to think of the most efficient way for the council to move forward. Perhaps it may be to add to this list, settle on it, and then have a discussion on that.
So just remember, it's one way we could proceed along those lines, as we did this morning. Irrespective of the amounts, we have 10 projects on this list, and we have a motion before us regarding these 10 projects. We could then amend that or add to that other projects so that we have at least a list of projects that we could work from and then make some decisions on how we might allocate that, those expenditures, or what's remaining, the $5 million amongst some list of projects.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm not quite sure what you're proposing, but I'd like to suggest a few others to add to the list without having to vote on those before they get added to the for consideration.
So Ellen, my thought would be that we would vote on this list as a starting point of 10 projects, and then you could certainly make a motion to add other projects to that. Again, we're not talking about any dollars, but just a list of those that we would consider. I don't want to put words in your mouth, Bob, but I'm...
Yeah, I think that's a...
Is that what
very reasonable approach? Yes, Mr. Chair.
So, in other words, what you're proposing is we vote to have this package in front of us, and then after that, everything gets added or subtracted as a separate vote.
To this list.
To this list. We're not talking about anything on dollars, just the project
right,
that we want to talk
right.
about.
But if there's anything that I want to propose...
You certainly can add to this.
Yeah, I don't really approve of this process. I mean, I appreciate that Bob is prepared and organized and has a list to put in front of us, and that's more than I've been able to put together in the last few hours, but I don't want to be put at a disadvantage if I want to propose some other things. I was just going to say maybe if there's a, you know, if I wanted to suggest some other things that we should also vote on, I would just like to add those right now before we start having to vote.
Okay. I guess I would...
That would be a fair way to proceed. If other members have things they'd like to add to this list, and then we could vote.
Sure. And that was the end game I was trying to get at, was a list that was longer than this. And I guess I'd go back to Bob. Would you be...
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think a friendly amendment, perhaps, from the council to add this list so that we have a smaller list.
Sure, and then we can take that up as one of the best ones.
Mr. Chair, what you're saying is that we're not going to vote on what's on here, but we're going to vote on anything that I want to add to it.
Yes, yes.
It just doesn't really seem quite...
What I want to do is, Ellen and members, what I'd like to do, and I'll get to you last, is just get a list of other projects that we can talk about. Otherwise, we've got 85 projects out on the table, and I want to get some sense of which ones we're talking about. That's all. And I don't want to talk about numbers now, just projects. Wes.
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, I agree with your consensus. I think we should let the council come up with the alternative list. One by one by one, let's go through the list and come up with that list.
Well,
Ellen?
Just a modification on that. It might be helpful if we were to, you know, maybe there's not 83 things that we all want to add. Maybe there's just a few more things. And so maybe we should try to put together a short list of things people would like to vote on. But not have to get a majority to get it to even talk about it. Let's just offer them up and make a list, and then we can work off of that.
Good idea.
Okay. Wayne?
It was my understanding we already sort of had the short list by the fact that we've got 6 votes, 5 votes, 4 votes, and I doubt if there's any money below 4 votes, and I'm assuming that if it got 0 votes in the first place, there'd be no reason to bring it back to the council. So I'm stating that I think using what he's already got here, what Bob put forth is okay, but maybe we should keep it within the ones here that got 6, 5, and 4 votes.
Other comments, members?
Well, I have to say it because everybody's talking about it, but we have a package here, and it's not a bad package, but it does not include the metro area. And if we do not include the metro area, this thing is not going to make it. And we need to include some projects from the metro area that are good projects, or we're going to have huge problems when it gets to the legislature. And I'm not interested in presenting a package that is not balanced and have a chance of passage. I see no reason to do that. If we're cutting off our, we're just going to be stupid if we don't acknowledge the political reality. I know that that doesn't sit well with some people, but I have to say, if it doesn't have some balance to it, I don't know how we think it's going to get through the legislature.
Chair. Wes. I think we also have to look at the facts involved here, too. We do have metro projects involved. They're embedded in some of these projects. Their very first one, C9, for $4 million, is 3 major acquisitions of WMA in the metro area. The rim easements are multiple programs within the metro area, and I think we have to sort those out. I agree that we have to have a geographical balance of some sort, but we are not totally ignoring the metro area.
We're just coming close.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
On the way back from the Capitol in the tunnel, I think I had either 2 or 3 metro area members saying the LaSard Council is very heavy on Greater Minnesota, very light on metro. And one of them was Representative Murphy, who I think has carries a big stick, kind of. And I certainly appreciate the fact that she came to me and gave me that in confidence. I think she came over there and said, you know, Bob, you better talk about this because you know it's going to be an awful hard thing to pass. And she's got a lot more experience here than I do. So I take everything she says.
Wayne?
There was something that was brought up this morning on this map that was handed out with the rim easements, and I noticed where those are at, and I can guarantee you that from where I come from, we do not have near this many rim easements and WRP easements as what's situated around here. I'm not saying that we can't be somewhat fair, but I'm not so sure that things are so far out of whack as what someone personally believes. If you look at how much conservation is already happening close by here, it's pretty significant. And I'm not saying that there isn't room for improvement. I'm thinking that while we started this process to trying to be true to what we thought was our constitutional right to be doing some of these things, and we started with a point system, and it's been working pretty good so far, and now we want to completely go away from the voting system that we used so far and start a whole new process, I think we're heading in the wrong direction.
Bob?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I would just make a note that of the 10 projects that I, in the proposal that I put out here, I think there's 8 of them and, have direct or indirect metro consideration, though what I found of value is, they all have strong components of the wildlife considerations. We all know that we have a number of proposals from the metro area that have a little more park-related relationships to them, but these are ones that I thought maybe more closely aligned with our constitutional mission, but also incidentally have some metro consideration as well. If you just look at that list.
Darden?
Yeah, I share the concerns that David has already expressed. It's really important that we keep our eye on the ball. The ball is our package of projects moving through relatively unscathed. And insofar as, and I know less, there are a number of projects that are metro, but there are a significant number of projects that absolutely fit what our mission is in statute and in the amendment that are very worthy projects. It is, I look at it, and it does not appear balanced to me, even if we pick up a few projects from Bowser and so forth. What scares the bejeebers out of me is that we hang tough with what we've got, basically, and bring it in, and then get a whole bunch of metro legislators saying, what the heck do they think they're doing, and begin to basically upset the whole apple cart. And so we end up with a package of recommendations that essentially just blown to pieces, and they write the doggone bill. And I think, I really, really believe that we've got to do more in the way of that geographic balance, given that we're not just doing projects for the sake of balance, but that we're doing projects that make sense, that are appropriate, that are within the guidance of the two guiding documents, the amendment and the statutory language. I'm fearful that we're on the brink of having the perfect be the enemy of the good.
In statute, we're supposed to follow this plan. And this plan isn't a greater Minnesota plan. And it's not a metro plan. It's a Minnesota plan. And a third of it is talking about the community and the urban community. And there are wildlife issues in the metro area. There are development pressures that are in the metro area. There are access issues that are in the metro area. And it talks about those in here. It talks about forest fragmentation. We took a vote this morning about trying to deal with forest fragmentation. I disagreed with that vote, but I respect that vote because it's part of the plan. It really talks about forest fragmentation here, but it also talks about urban sprawl. And urban sprawl is not just in the seven county metro area. It's in Rochester, it's in St. Cloud, it's around Duluth, it's around any of the regional centers. And the impacts of those where property is lost and where people, and not everybody does hop in their car to drive out to Greater Minnesota to recreate. Some don't have a car. Some have to use the bus. Some of them are using the waters and the lakes and the rivers that are nearby, and that's their whole impact and their whole impact of the outdoors. So the plan is supposed to look at the whole state. And what we have so far with $5 million left on the table doesn't look at the whole state. Now, yes, the maps with the rim easements, and Les, I was on the Dakota SWCD, and those locations in Dakota County are hard to come by because of the cost and the pressures for development that are there. You'll see that there's not a lot of dots in some of those counties, and as Carver and Scott develop more, there's going to be less opportunity for protection. Rochester the same way, St. Cloud, Sherburne, those areas as sprawl continues. Now, has sprawl slowed? Yes, just as the rate of purchases in the forest area has slowed because the economy is poor and because we've got credit issues where people can't do that acquisition. So I think we have to look back at the plan. We have to look at what we were directed to do in statute is to look at these plans and what we can do to do things. I believe, and I know other people disagree on the council, but I think restoration, when we have properties that we can do restoration, bring things up, and where there are those unique opportunities where we may lose property to development, and there are some of those, I grant, in every area, and we should try to make those acquisitions, and with those acquisitions also have restoration. So that's what I'm going to look at here is this, and I think that's what, when this bill comes to the legislature, they're going to look at the whole picture with Minnesota Statewide Conservation Plan, which the public paid for. Public paid for in anticipation of if the Constitution was passed, and it did pass. And now we have the challenge of trying to make those allocations.
Further comments? We do have a motion on the table right now. Again, without regard to the amount, to adopt as a starting point for a list 10 additional projects that we should talk about. Is there any further discussion on that motion? Yes, Bob?
Just to point out that I think that if this 10, list of 10 were adopted for further consideration along with the 14 that we have, I would say nearly 10 projects that would have direct metro consideration, so not quite half, but a significant portion. I think that's worthy of keeping in mind.
Ellen?
Well, Mr. Chair, I'd like to add a few to the list.
Okay.
Before we vote on it.
Okay, and Bob, that's great.
Just for consideration.
Yes, please.
And, you know, I'm trying to go through and prioritize a little bit here. And, I would add P8, which is the Rum River Cedar Creek acquisition. And I guess I should. There's a dollar amount that's requesting 3.8, and they recommended, there are only two votes, but they recommended $633,000. F8 is the Audubon Forest and Savannah Restoration. And
F8 and F9.
The next would be Fish, Game, and Wildlife A and B, which is SNA Restoration and SNA Protection. These are on page.
FGWA.
FGWA.
8A and B.
And the amount for the 8A is $120,000. And the amount for 8B is $246,000. And then Fish, Game, and Wildlife F is the Big Wood. 8F, thank you, $140,000. And then finally, the last one I'm going to propose at the moment is Fish, Game, and Wildlife 8J, which is the Metro Conservation Corridor, $2 million.
Chair, just to the member's point, on the spreadsheet I think that we got out here, line 118 and line 119, in column A it says I, but in column B it says FGW8J. Action pass, and line 119 says, in column A it says J, but in column B it says FGW8K. So we need to reconcile by name, I think it's probably, I think that my guess is line 18, 118 would be FGW8I, not J. And if that's the TPL Metro Conservation Corridor project.
Call
it.
Let me run back through these, Chair, if I want that, I need some more information on P8, Rum River Cedar Creek Acquisition. Mm-hmm. F8, Audubon Forest and Savannah Restoration. F9, Great River Green, St. Croix Bluffland Restoration. Fish, Game, and Wildlife, 8A, SNA Metro Area. Fish Game and Wildlife, AB, that's another SNA one, and I don't recall the...
Protection.
Fish Game and Wildlife, 8F, Big Woods, and Fish Game and Wildlife, 8J, Metro Conservation Corps.
Which, as Bob said, is...
I think it's actually I.
Actually
I.
Okay, they just... the sequence is missed. Okay, so we have David.
Yeah, Ellen, my question is, with a number of these projects, it seems like the size would lead them more towards a small grant program than a, an allocation here, and I'm wondering why here versus, I'm happy with the big ones to talk about, but the little ones, I really think we ought to refer to the small grant program.
Mr. Chair,
Ellen?
David, that's, I haven't really thought about that. I'm not sure that I know exactly what criteria we're proposing for the small grant program. So, because we haven't really discussed that in the group, I know we've gotten some emails on it.
So, Ellen, just to clarify, the criteria meaning what the uses of the money would be for? Same thing as, I mean, it's in the Constitution, protect, enhance, restore.
So it wouldn't be any different from...
No, no.
So it's just the dollar amount that
correct.
We're talking about. Honestly, you know, I haven't really commented on the small grant program. My feeling is that $400,000, that the legislature won't see that as a small grant, that's a large grant. And so I do have some concerns about the dollar amounts that are proposed. That's something that we'll have to, I figured we'd get to that discussion later, and so I didn't really want to get into it at this point, and I know the committee's been working hard on that. But for some of these smaller projects, perhaps that would be possible.
What point,
Mr. Chair, since we're taking add-ons here, I really wanted to listen to the feelings of the council about everything which would originally been voted on as getting 6, 5, and 6 votes. So could I add the ones that have not been included so far also added in?
Okay.
And I can't tell you right now which ones those are. We got an expanded list. I do believe it was T18 has not been included. I believe W5, W22, T6, W12, and FGW1. No, also F10.
Well, that's included already. No.
Okay. 5 and 6.
Anything in 5 and 6.
We'll let Bill write these down and we'll read them back and make sure we got them.
W5, wetland management area restorations. Wildlife management area restorations. W-22, public land, wetland restoration and enhancement. P-6, cooperative WMA acquisition. W-12, shallow lake shoreline easements. Fish, Game and Wildlife 1, continued shoreland restoration program.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Did you have FGW1, Minnesota Land Trust? That also got 5 votes, but I don't believe Mr. Becker read that off.
I think it was the last one.
Yes, it is the last one.
Okay, sorry. Pardon me.
Are there any others? We have a list, a very long list now, probably 20 projects or so.
I think we have a shorter list.
We have shorter than we had. We still have a long list for $5 million. So are there any other additions? We have a motion then. Again, we're not talking about money, any dollar allocation, just a list of projects we want to further consider as a council.
Rick?
Within Mississippi Wildlife Habitat Restoration and Enhancement.
What
can you give us with the FGW8D? I don't think that was on.
Eight, what was it, dog? Do you have a dog?
Yep.
Any others? Any further discussion on that motion then? That these would be the projects that we would be talking about now to look at allocating the remaining roughly $5 million. Hearing no further discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Wake up. Motion carries. Now we have a list of projects. So Bob, I guess I would probably turn it back to you just as a starting point. We have a number of projects you listed, and I'm not sure how you want to proceed with
these. These are perfect.
These are perfect, all right. And they also are looking for more money than we have.
Well, I think we might be able to, just for discussion purposes, we may want to have a longer discussion, perhaps on the issue of the small grant program. That might serve as a vehicle to sort, if you will. Some of the programs. So I guess just suggest that we recommend for consideration of the small grant program those projects on this current list that are under $400,000.
Clarification, Russ? Only if the council agrees that they're pertinent and applicable, not just automatically?
No, correct. Just to be considered for application. Mr. Chair, thank you. Okay.
So the motion, Bill, what are we?
The motion is to exclude from the list those eligible for the small grants program.
And eligibility defined by?
Under $400,000 or under.
Discussion on that motion. So just so we're all clear members of which projects that would include.
Can I ask a question, which is the steelhead program is under that number. Would we back that off and make that part of that and make 11 instead of 10?
Well, Mr. Chair, Bob, Mr. Hardwell, I had thought about that, and I frankly, for other reasons, believe that I voted on the affirmative side of that, and that perhaps at another time would make a motion to reconsider that one. I frankly have some doubts that they're ready, to be honest with you, based on the testimony that we've heard so far today. So I would like to come back to that, but I certainly keep that open as an option.
I was on that point. Yeah. If we're going to deal with everything under 400, we should. Like with everything under
400. Yes. So, Bill, if you just, when you get a chance, if you can reiterate, so we're all on the same page, which projects we would eliminate them from consideration.
You have all of the dollar numbers written down in the list.
Would you like me to go through it?
Yeah,
I've got it too.
Okay. W5, Waterfowl Association Wildlife Management Area Restoration for $329. Pheasant Forever Public Land Restoration for $163.
And the number on that?
Sorry, W22. FCW8A, SNA Restoration and Enhancement at $120. FCW8B, SNA Protection at $246. FCW8E, Minnesota Valley National Wildlife Restoration and Enhancement for $375. W16, Fish and Wildlife Service Partners for Fish Wildlife Private Lands Habitat Restoration for $199. F9, Great River Greening St. Croix Bluffland Forest Restoration. FTW8C, AMA Acquisition. I believe that's a Metro AMA Acquisition. FGW8D, Friends of the Mississippi River Wildlife Habitat, for $143. And I believe that's the list.
Mr. Chair, Farmwell, did you get the Big Woods, did you say that? FGW8F, at $140? That was not mentioned.
Sorry, I probably missed it. FGW8F, Big Woods, $140,000. Sorry, you're right.
As soon as Bill's done, he can then give us the list of projects that would then be still considered.
Why don't I give it a shot? D5, Bluffland Protection. W13, Acquisition Restoration, WBA in Minnesota Valley. W14, WMB, Restore and Plants. FGW8G, Metro Habitat Protection. FGW8H, Expand Minnesota Valley Wildlife Refuge. FGW8L, Crow County Habitat Protection. FGW9I, Lake Rebecca. P8, Rum River Cedar Creek Acquisition. F8, Audubon Forest and Savannah Restoration. FGW8J or I, Metro Conservation Corridors at $2 million. F10, Intensive Rough Grass Management. P18, Prairie Heritage Enhancer. W5, Wildlife Management and Restoration. W22, Public Land Initiatives. W22, P6, Cooperative Wildlife Management Area Acquisition. W12, Shallow Lake Shorelines. Fish, Game, and Wildlife 1, Continued Shoreline Restoration.
Mr. Chair, I think Bob, Mr. Becker listed W5, and that's, I have it on my list of $329,000. So I believe that that would be removed from the list for consideration.
W5?
Yes.
W12. I've got another page here. Fish, Game, and Wildlife 8D.
Yeah, I stand here and read W12.
And that would be it.
Mr. Chair, I'm just going to Just to be clear, W-12 is on the list. I don't know if Mr. Becker read that.
He did.
Okay.
He did. Okay, so we have then a motion to remove the projects that were requesting less than $400,000 or less from this list. And Bill just enumerated those projects. Is there any further discussion on that motion? So, Bill, that would bring us down to a how many, did you get a count of how many? I don't have a count of how many. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Opposed.
Okay, motion carries. So now we'll let Bill collect the spots and numbers so we know which projects are on the table.
I have 19 projects on the table.
Mr. Chair,
50.
I do too.
So members, let's just go through and make sure we know which projects. So I'll
scheme that are 16.
Can you just run through those again? Just I think the numbers would be sufficient to give us the alphanumeric.
Starting with the solar sheet, P5, W13, W14, Fish, Game and Wildlife HC, Fish, Game and Wildlife, excuse me.
That was
Fish, Game and Wildlife 8G, Fish, Game and Wildlife 8H, Fish, Game and Wildlife 8L, Fish, Game and Wildlife 9I, Wetland 16, Prairie 8. Prairie 8, F8, Fish, Game and Wildlife 8, J or I, F10, W22, P6, W12, Fish, Game and Wildlife 1. And that gets me down to 15.
The third from the end was P.
P6.
Okay, so that's the list that we have now.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Ellen.
I'm going to propose, given the conversation that we've been having, that we might want to start with the metro area projects and discuss those first.
Okay.
We're
going to
go through these one by one.
That's right.
So why don't we just start with 6s, 5s, 4s and work down the list from on the metro project, just so there's a consistent order to the way we're doing it.
We're going to talk about them all.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, just for reference purposes, my number's right. We've got $15,839,000.
Can you repeat that again?
$15,839,000.
Another way of putting it is we're $10,800,000 over.
A little over.
I guess, Senator Anderson, just in response to your request, I guess I would leave it up to council members. I mean, we can go through every one of them, or we can go through the ones that council members want to hear more information about. I guess I would leave that to members to identify which ones they have questions about or would like the council to discuss.
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess I'd like to discuss P8, the Rum River Cedar Creek acquisition, and I had some questions. Is Mr. Vonda Lindley here now? Yeah, and I had some conversation with him today and had some questions and thought it would be useful to get that discussion in front of
him. So members, just so we're clear, it's
P8. And this is an acquisition project, and I guess the reason that I pulled it out of some of the acquisition projects that we have here is that to me this one looked like the one that was the most in danger of development pressure, that it was likely to disappear if it wasn't acquired soon. It's in a part of the metro area that is facing rapid development, and it involves some pretty significant river property. And the other question I had discussed with Mr. Bondalindi is this a park? And I'm not sure that it is a park, and I think we sort of need to talk about that a little bit.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Vanderson, members, just for the record, I'm John Bondalindi, Director of Parks with Anoka County, and thank you for the opportunity to be back. I did testify on February 9th, and appreciate the opportunity to expand on that just briefly for you. With me is Jeff Perry. Jeff is our Park Operations Manager and also oversees our Natural Resources Management, fishing and hunting programs within our park system. The first point I want to make is this acquisition will not be part of the Metropolitan Regional Park System. It is not in the Metropolitan Council's Regional Park Plan. It is not in their CIP. This would be managed as a conservation area outside of the regional park system, really more in keeping with the WMA, and we do have other areas in the Anoka County system that we do manage more for wildlife purposes, hunting and fishing specifically. In terms of hunting and fishing, I'll have Jeff address that in just a moment. As part of our management program, we would be restoring 275 acres of prairie. Development of the site would be limited to public access in the form of an access road and parking lot. We would also envision some hiking trails on the property to afford public access to both the Cedar Creek and Rum River for fishing, as well as to different areas of the site for hunting. We've completed an appraisal on the property, and I'm happy to report that I just got that this morning, actually, and the appraised value does fall slightly below the amount that we requested, so we're very pleased with that.
And what, excuse me, that amount? Can you disclose what that amount is?
I prefer not to disclose that, Mr. Chair, if I could, other than to say it is slightly below the amount that we requested, if that would be okay.
Okay.
We think that this project can fit into all four funding categories, prairie, wetland, forest, and wildlife. We did choose to have it in the prairie category, but it does offer over 2 miles of access to both of these water bodies. It does provide for, as I indicated, about 275 acres for prairie restoration, contains some significant wildlife habitat and forest habitat as well. It would be our intent to work with the Minnesota Conservation Corps in terms of rolling out the limited site development that we're going to do, which would be access to the river, trails, as I mentioned, and other access. We're also looking at working with capable partners to provide access to disabled individuals for hunting on the site. I want to also mention that we are a well-established department. We do manage 10,000 acres around Anoka County. We have the staff, the expertise, the budget to handle this project in perpetuity. So I can guarantee you that we will deliver on what we promise and will be a good steward of the land. There are really few resources like this left in the metro area. I think in the north metro area, this is one of them. Very few, if any, that are of this caliber. And I'd like to just hand out photographs of the site that we brought along. And maybe while I'm doing that, I'll turn it over to Jeff to make some comments about specifically the habitat on the site. Again, we'll keep this brief in the interest of time. How we would provide for fishing and hunting access. Jeff?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, members of the council, the fishing opportunities on the Rum River are some of the best in the state, primarily for the smallmouth fishery opportunities. The hunting opportunities would include upland game species such as white-tailed deer, rough grouse, pheasants, and wild turkey. It's in wild turkey zone 601 in the northern part of the metro turkey section, which is currently open to hunting. There currently are no hunting restrictions on the land, so you can hunt waterfowl on both the Rum River and the Cedar Creek without any firearm discharge restrictions. So everything is in accordance with the state hunting and fishing regulations. So there's full access for the public for both hunting and fishing opportunities.
Would it be open for hunting all the time that the seasons are open?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Hartwell, it would be open during regular fishing and hunting seasons at destinations.
Bob?
And, Mr. Chair, gentlemen,
in your proposal, you said public hunting would be provided for through the issuance of permits. And so that was in part one of the hang-ups that I had on this issue. And one of the thoughts I had was, we're limited by the Constitution, unless otherwise provided by law. I am concerned about the notion of a precedent that we would set if this is in fact not open, that we would try and pass a law to address that particular constitutional requirement. That's a precedent I'm not ready yet to take. So my other thought was, if there was any opportunity to protect this land through easements rather than acquisition. So I guess I had really two questions. Can you clarify with certainty what you meant by issuance of permits, and did you consider the issue of easements in the alternative if there was a problem with the openness?
Mr. Chair, members, in terms of waterfall hunting, it would be open for access to rivers or waterfall hunting, so that would be open. With respect to the taking of deer or other upland species, it would be our preference to use a permit system for this land, simply given the scale of it and the fact that it is in an urbanizing area. We want to be careful on how we handle that. That's how we handle hunts within our other parks. They're very successful. Last year we issued about 120 permits for whitetails, and we had 70 deer taken. We do that on a rotational open lottery type of a program every year. We did work with capable partners as well. So I think in one degree, yes, it would be open for waterfowl with regard to upland species. We would be moving more towards a permit system, I would say. Fishing would be wide open. So.
And so you would understand, sir, then it would not meet the constitutional test as it required without making some other change in the law?
Mr. Chair, members, I'm not going to say I'm an expert on that particular law, so I defer to legal counsel on that.
It would be just to be clear, that would be my view.
I suspect there are other projects that are coming forward to you that may include grassland habitat, for instance, that won't be open for fishing. So I don't know how you deal with that issue in terms of
they can fish all they want. Equity. It's just a question of what they catch.
Well. I guess on that point, though, Greg, or Mr. Knott, if you could just help enlighten the council about, again, your interpretation of the constitutional provision about open hunting and fishing access.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, it does say open to during the open season to the public. It would kind of depend on how the permit system was structured. If it was something similar, I don't know if anybody's ever looked at that pheasant hunting the way they do it at the Vermilion Highlands, state wildlife management area. They call it a permit system, but basically they've got so many parking spots, and when those parking spots are full, no one else can get access to the area. Some people might consider that open to the public. It's just a first come, first served basis. You're going to limit the numbers of the public. But if you're, and we do have other areas of state, excuse me, where drawings occur. But the question is whether you need to, whether it's open during the entire season, and is everybody from the public have an equal chance of doing it. That may comply. I mean, if it's structured in that manner. But if it's only certain people that are allowed in, like a lot of metro parks, for the bull hunting, you have to have you have to belong to a certain organization or something like that. That may be a problem.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, I didn't hear the answer to the next question about the easement issue.
Chair, I'm not sure what the question.
Yeah,
in lieu of fee title acquisition.
Yes.
I have not explored that with the current landowner.
The reason, sir, that I bring it up is that there's nothing in the Constitution that prevents us from protecting land through easements, but not having it open for. And under that circumstance, it's not required by the Constitution to be open for hunting.
Sure.
Ellen?
Mr. Chair, I know we've touched on this before. This is a really important discussion for us to be having. And I would point out that a number of us wrote this language and had a lot of discussions about what it means. And to me, this is a perfect example of why we put in a phrase that says unless provided by law. If we just put a period after it must be open at all times, it would be different, but we didn't. we said that there will be some circumstances where we may want to limit hunting, and I'm not suggesting that we should do that lightly, but I think we should think about the fact, well, first of all, in the discussions that I recall in the Senate, my understanding was that's why we had that, because there's some places where you have to have some limits in order to ensure access. And that may sound contradictory, but this is, to me, this is a perfect example. If we were to establish this piece of property as public land, open for the wide range of hunting and fishing activities as well as other recreation options, we would open access to those activities to thousands of people within 10 miles, 20 miles of where they live. And that means more access for those activities than we would get from doing the same land somewhere else in the state of Minnesota. And so, you know, we really need to think about what does access mean. To me, access to some prime fishing spots that I could take my kids to on a Saturday afternoon means, and me and thousands, you know, 3 million, what, how many people live in the metropolitan area? 2 million, 3 million? Would have access to these prime opportunities, whereas if we don't do something like this, they're going to have to drive 2, 3, 4 hours away, and that means a lot of them aren't going to be able to do it. And so if we're talking about access, I think it's wrong to say that we're forbidden by Constitution to do this. I think it's up to us to interpret how much we want to open that door, and this is the place where I think it would be appropriate to open that door to say that we think that this meets the meaning of the Constitution, and by law we should permit this, but that's a discussion for the council.
Mr. Rockwood?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, council members, I'd like Mr. Perry just briefly to explain how we do this, why we have this permit system from the standpoint of public safety, and ensuring that we're managing our lands to meet the harvest targets that are set up, the scientific approach that we take. So, just briefly, Jeff.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, members of the council, the lottery system is open to the public. There's no discrimination whatsoever. It's very similar to the Camp Ripley deer management program, where it's published in the hunting regulations. You apply on a lottery basis, and you're selected randomly based on the number of hunting slots that they have available. And, you know, it's all driven by the population of the particular deer in the area. Once the population and management goal has been set, then that's the target and objective, you know, for the hunt. So it's, you know, we select a number of hunters based on the number of deer that need to be removed for a particular area. That's exclusively for the deer hunt. For the pheasant hunt, duck hunting, and grouse hunting, other upland game species like that, it is an open process. And again, it's based on the parking area, similar to a boat launch. When the boat launch is full, you can't launch your boat, you can't go out and angle in these particular areas. So it would be based on parking size and capacity to go in and take upland game species as well.
Jim?
John, I have a question. On your map there, it shows hunting area approximately 283 acres, but the acquisition is 550 acres, so almost half of it then is not open to hunting and fishing.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Cox, what we did is we built in a 500-foot buffer from the perimeter based on state regulations for 500 discharge from any structures. And that's a very conservative buffer. In most areas on that perimeter, there are no structures, as you can see. However, we just built that 500-foot in just to, as a conservative figure, to say that's a minimum number of safe acres that can be hunted. That likely will be expanded closer to the 500 mark.
No? Mr. Chair, I'm sorry I'm at risk of getting on a soapbox at the minute, at the moment, but I just feel, and it's not just about this project, but I feel really strongly that we need to, you know, in my committee, in the Environment Committee, we hear so much discussion, we wring our hands about how to keep young people engaged in outdoor activities, about how to keep these hunting and fishing traditions alive, and respect for the great outdoors. And I know everyone at this table is incredibly concerned about that. And I think that we need to be very serious about how and intentional about how to make that happen. And I firmly believe that if we don't have access to those things where the people are, then people are not going to do it. And that's part of the problem, is that if we put all our attention in these beautiful natural lands we have all across the state, we are not going to bring the generations, the future generations, into these activities. So we just really need to keep that in mind. I think, you know, when I promoted this amendment to the people that I talked to all, you know, for all last year, this is the type of opportunity that I had in mind and that I think a lot of people that I talked to had in mind, a chance where so many of us, where the people live, to be able to engage in some really high-quality activities, including hunting and fishing, close to home. I mean, that's something that really is pretty priceless.
Point.
Oh, first of all, I don't mind you getting on your soapbox, because everything you said was extremely correct, you know, and I think we all are looking for more opportunities for people, especially in metro. One question I have from some other members of the council who have just got through having some concerns about additional acquisition and not enough into taking care of what we've got. How does this fit with you that we're going into another acquisition project instead of a restoration?
I think that question is directed to you, Rick.
We got rid of most of the restoration projects with the under $400,000. I was going to be asking just if it was indeed about restoration, but I want to do that before with a larger question, because Ellen is correct that of the people in this room, the two people who were involved in writing what passed, not what was done 10 years ago or 5 years ago or 2 years ago, but what passed, were Ellen and I. And the language of the Constitution is to protect, restore, and enhance wetlands, prairies, and forests, and fish, game, and wildlife habitats. It does not say to protect hunting and fishing access. It says if there is fee title acquisition, then it must be open for hunting and fishing as allowed by law. I think that's a very important distinction. I would rather have restoration if we went to the 3.8 million here on this project. I'd like to know how much of that is restoration, and also how many wetlands are on the property, any unique plants or animals or endangered or threatened scientific reasons why we should protect this property.
Chair members, none of the 3.8 million includes restoration. We did actually have in our original proposal that went through the Prairie Group a restoration component that was part of this. That was taken out by that subcommittee and was just narrowed down to the acquisition. Feeling that was the most important thing at this time, is to lock up the land. We can do the restoration later. In terms of how we would finance the restoration, I don't think we'd rule out the opportunity to come back and visit with your council at some later date, but we would also pursue other resources, including the Anoka Conservation District, the Rum River Watershed Management Organization. I think Jeff has a couple of other resources in mind, certainly working with the Minnesota Conservation Corps is one possibility. It sounds like they may be getting some federal funding and stimulus package to put people to work in the state through the MCC, so we're looking forward to talking more with Len Price about that. Jeff, if you could add, I think you had some other ideas as well.
The Anoka Conservation District and the Bowser Program as well would match some funding for restoration. And also, to allude to your question of existing habitat, there's some poor fen, rich fen communities in the northern tier of the property, some remnant barrens, oak savanna, and then there's approximately 275 acres that are ag fields, which would be converted to grasslands.
David?
Of all of those sources you just mentioned and any others, what about matches for acquisition? You know, the likelihood we're going to be able to give you 3.2 is not high. I won't say it couldn't happen, but if we gave you half of it, and you figure out, so you have a plan for what to do. And I...
Thank you.
You knew sooner or later we were going to ask you.
I wanted to ask you this question. It's a difficult question, because by not placing it into the Metro Regional Park system, we essentially excluded ourselves from going after those dollars. Would we take 1.9? I think the answer is yes. How we come up with the other matching dollars is something we would need to work on. I certainly would, I think Anoka County would certainly be open to the idea of doing some kind of installment approach, as you've discussed with some of the other proposers that have been before you, and I think we would be able to work with the landowner on an installment process.
Rick, I apologize. You had a follow-up to that previous question. Yeah. I'll get you a second.
The question related to the property taxpayer commitment for acquisition, either through the county or through the WMO, and then also the capacity for the county to bond, well, the
bond or trespass. Mr. Chair, in terms of tax capacity, currently the site produces about $52,000 per year in local property taxes, that's for 550 acres. It's not the entire site that's owned by the development group, which is 822 acres. We have already spoken with the city's county about this loss of funds. We have worked out an arrangement with Oak Grove and Andover to do offsets. By assisting those communities in other ways, in terms of lakeshore management within some of our other regional parks. So I think we've addressed that question from a taxation standpoint. And there was a second question you had as part of that.
My question was with bonding, because Washington County and Dakota County have passed a referendum to allow for bonding for acquisition for farmland and natural areas. But if I remember Dakota County correctly, we didn't have to go to the last one. The county board could have bonded, but chose to go to the voters. Mr. Singer's here. So could the county board bond for acquisition?
Sure, members. Could the county bond? Yes, they could. I can't speak for the county board as to whether or not they would take up a vote and vote affirmatively to do that. I think county, is getting stretched in terms of their bonding capacity with all their other needs, particularly in the transportation area. It might be a short-term remedy to bridge the gap between where we sit today and being able to purchase the land, with the notion in mind that we repay those bonds to future state appropriations, whether they be through this group or, in that case, Metro Parks. But if we go to the Metro Park route, that's going to place one restriction on how that land is used with respect to fishing and hunting. That would be my major caution or concern there.
Scott?
Obviously, the hunting on this property, or the access to hunting and fishing on the property, is a concern shared by lots of council members. If this project were to be funded, could you ensure that those hunting opportunities would be a perpetual right, and that, I mean, if the property got developed around, all of a sudden you'd have to then eliminate those hunting opportunities, would you commit that those hunting opportunities would be perpetual?
Chair, council members, yes, as I indicated in my testimony on February 9th, thank you. I assume that there would be some kind of a binding agreement between Anoka County and the state of Minnesota that spells out the provisions of the grant, what the dollars are to be used for, and some type of a perpetual state interest in that property, whether those are legal covenants or what have you, that would dictate the management and use of the property for those purposes. So my answer, that's my long answer, my short answer is yes.
And Mr. Knopf, can you just clarify again? I know you've grabbed the statutes about on a 500-foot buffer. Could you just clarify that?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, the witness mentioned the 500-foot, but the 500-foot provision does not apply to public land. I know a lot of people kind of misconstrue this. Let me just read the sentence, because you can see why. It says, a person may not take a wild animal with a firearm within 500 feet of a building occupied by a human or livestock without the written permission of the owner, occupant, or lessee. But then there's a colon, and it says, on another person's private land. In other words, you can shoot next to your house if you want to. And then, or on a public right-of-way. So those are the limitations. So that 500-foot provision either applies to another person's private land or on a public right-of-way. So if you're on public land that's not a public right-of-way, the way DNR interprets that statute is that the 500-foot rule does not apply. If you're on public, if you're on public land, it's not a public right of way.
Bob?
Gentlemen, just to be clear, you were testifying about how you've done it before, but it was not on this particular property, correct?
Correct.
And so then my next question is, have you surveyed the residents in and around this particular property to determine what their
acceptance or not would be of the notion of living next to land that would be open for hunting. I'm raising that question because I would imagine that as much as they would love to have this property in a conservation circumstance, they might also be concerned about it.
Members, thank you for that question. Actually, we have sent letters to every adjacent landowner. And I hope that by now, I know I shared with Mr. Becker, I don't know if you would ever distribute the letters, but we do have letters of support from at least, I think, 6 or 7 adjacent residents in favor of this project. I understand those parameters. I've had a couple people honestly question me about that, the hunting aspects, with some concerns. I've gotten back to them, I've explained to them our approach that we would use, and they're satisfied.
Does that include 500 foot?
Yes.
Which we think would not
fit. Well, we would need to revisit that. I understand that we would have public meetings before we would put together a management plan. So I think, it's a favorable response. Also, the history of the property, you should know, it was owned by two farmers who hunted the land regularly, trapped on the land, fished on the land. There's a history of hunting there that's gone on probably since the land was first settled, I'm sure back in the 1800s. The neighbors are used to hunting. So this is not going to be anything new from that standpoint.
David, but I have to say, I think that's an unfair question, because we're not asking that about every other acquisition that might be taking place. And there are certainly going to be conflicts wherever you have hunting and people living. And if we're going to use that as a criteria, we need to use that as a criteria on every project, not just on this one. So I appreciate your asking. I think it's a fair but unfair question. Because we need to be consistent about it.
Wayne.
Was it my understanding that the owners would consider half this year, half next year?
Mr. Council members, I haven't had that specific discussion with them, but I believe that they would be open to that funding strategy. They're very interested in working with the county. They're very interested in this property being preserved as open space for hunting and fishing and public enjoyment versus it being developed into a one-acre lot development, which ultimately is the direction that this will go if we fail to seize on this opportunity.
With that, honestly, this project, even though it only originally got 2 votes, does have some merit. And I really wouldn't mind seeing them get being on the approval end of this thing for 1.9 this year, and half this year, and half next year, just like we did in one of the other ones, and then let them go off to the next year and see if they can't find some additional funds.
Are there any further questions for the witnesses regarding this project?
No, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Motion?
Well, that was my next question.
That was a motion.
Okay, so could you restate the motion, please? And I just want to say that Rick is actually double booked in other committees. He's going to get excused from Mary Murphy, Representative Murphy's committee and the Fish and Game Committee, so he'll be right back. And I told him that I would not take any votes while he's gone. So we can certainly talk about a motion, but I would like to withhold any decision until Representative Hanson returns. But back to the motion.
The motion is then to... for P8, the Anoka County Parks and Recreation acquisition for Rum River Cedar Creek acquisition, be recommended at 1.9 for FY10 and additional 1.9 for FY11.
Okay. We're table that motion now, Mr. Chair, until
this
Representative Hanson's back.
We can table that. We can discuss it. I just told the Representative Hanson we would not vote on it. So
Would your motion be better if it were consistent with the language that we use on the Forest Legacy?
It would. I can't remember
next year. If whatever Greg came up with that indicated it was there, but it wasn't necessarily.
Yeah. That however language, did, whatever it was.
Is that a friendly amendment to your motion?
Yes. Okay. If we can figure out what that language was.
Okay. So, members, we can certainly discuss this motion. We'll vote a vote until Representative Hanson returns, but we certainly can talk about this now. So the motion, Bill, do you want to restate the motion, just so we're clear?
The motion as stated was for PA to fund $1.9 million in FY10 and $1.9 million for FY11. The request is to modify the second phrase, and I believe what we used was something to the effect of the balance in FY11.
So discussion on...
And, well, Mr. Chair, I just want to clarify. That you might be appropriating the money in FY11.
No.
It's really more of a... We're going to put some indication in the law that this is the first half payment with the intention of revisiting the second half payment.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I don't think Greg meant to say half. This is a
portion. Installment payment.
It is a portion. Maybe the whole thing. Mm-hmm.
Discussion on this motion. Well, we need to table this motion for a vote until Representative Hansen returns.
So I move to table it.
So is there discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, so we'll table that motion until Representative Hansen returns. So members, we have a list now that we talked about one. Are there other projects that you would like to have? We have witnesses here that can probably speak to most of, not all of the projects.
I'd like to hear on the extension of the Minnesota Valley Wildlife Refuge.
Yes, please come forward. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Almost evening. Almost evening, yes. Welcome.
Thank you.
Can you share which number this is?
Okay, this is a great question. This is, I believe, W13, is that right?
8H.
I'm sorry, yes.
So what did we read about in the paper yesterday with the expansion with federal dollars of this? Isn't that the same area?
Yes. I'll introduce myself and a little bit of background. I am Sarah Bloom. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Valley National Wildlife Refuge Trust, Inc., which is a nonprofit 501c3 that was created when a settlement was reached for the mitigation of the impact of the north-south runway on Minnesota Valley Refuge. And we have been working within the Minnesota Valley River to expand the refuge. Upriver from where the original boundaries of the refuge are, which essentially runs Fort Sill and Batavia. And we have been working further upriver between essentially Carver and Henderson. We also have been acquiring waterfall production area land outside of the metro area, primarily in Blue Earth County and Sibley County. We have been working hard to find other funds to leverage the settlement funds. We have received some funds through the LCCMR, for example. We pursue funds, for example, from NACA, both for acquisition and restoration, to leverage what we have within the Minnesota Valley Trust. So what you read in the paper yesterday was, in fact, related directly to this request. We do have 5 landowners down in the Blakely Township, Henderson area, with property totaling actually 820 acres. And as of this morning, I have 5 more phone calls. So we do have tremendous opportunity and are hoping that we can receive some of these funds, and we will match them with other funds.
So the funds that were mentioned were the mitigation funds?
Yes.
And is this request a metro request or a outside the metro area request?
It's a metro request. This particular area is down southern end of Scott County and very northern tip of Missouri County. Blakely Township.
So just barely metro.
Pardon me?
So just barely metro.
Well, it depends on how you define metro. From a metro conservation corridor perspective, it's our metro boundaries, yeah. Yeah. Certainly will be accessed by metro area citizens as the refuge is.
And Ms. Loon, just to be clear, this would be 685 acres of free
title acquisition?
That's conservative. I actually am negotiating on 820 acres. It will probably result in a total of 820 acres.
And the amount that was originally requested was $1.2 million.
Correct.
And that's still...
Yes. And we will be using other funds for the balance of that acquisition.
And what does that property look like right now?
It's really primarily floodplain property on both sides of the river, the Minnesota River.
And so what type of restoration or enhancement work, if any, would need to be done, assuming you would take title to the property?
With these particular parcels, very little. It would be, we will acquire it, and it will then get donated by us to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to be managed in perpetuity by the Minnesota Valley Reservoir, and it will be open to public hunting and fishing.
So the title is held by the refuge?
It will be held by the refuge, yes.
Rick?
I apologize for being back late, but there was an article in the paper yesterday about purchases. I don't know if it was just asked, but go ahead for your clarification. So how does that relate into the proposal?
It's directly related.
Okay, so those are going to continue regardless of what we provide?
We hope to, yes. We are definitely actively looking for funds. These funds should be received and will help us move that forward.
This is a project that I really like, but again, that newspaper sobered me up. Would it do great damage if you were offered half of the 1.2?
No. It doesn't do damage. I pursue other funds so that we can do more and more and more. We can acquire additional land to expand the river further. So it's what you give us is what we can expand.
Expand this a
lot. Rick, on a different topic, Representative Murphy's committee is meeting in room 5, and they are going to be going over clean water fund. Kind of a full room down there. I did tell Representative Murphy that Kristen Gunther had talked with her, and she would like to see you after the committee.
I didn't think you were that kind of guy. I had a bro. All right, any further questions regarding this project? If not, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Hanson, now that you're back, we have a motion. That is tabled now, but assuming that the author of the motion would renew that, to take $1.9 million in fiscal 10 to be used for the acquisition of the property that we were talking about in Anoka County, that would be P8. So at this point, if you'd like to renew the motion.
To fund P8 at $1.9 million in fiscal year 10 and with a commitment to fund the balance in a future recommendation.
Okay, so I guess we need a motion then to bring it off the table.
So moved.
Okay, any further discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We have a motion. Again, Bill, just one more time so we're clear.
To fund PH at $1.9 million in FY10 and with a commitment to fund the balance in a future recommendation.
Any further discussion on that motion? Yes, Scott.
Was the motion intended to commit to the balance of the funds in the following year or a recommendation to fund the balance in the following year?
Or Bill?
The term recommendation has to do with what we're doing here. We're not appropriating, we're recommending. So there is a commitment to fund the balance in a future recommendation. Or recommend funding the balance in a future recommendation.
Further discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No opposed.
Motion carried. So we'll let Beth update.
So the balance now is just a little bit north of $3 million.
Scott? Are we up to the next project? Talking about the next project? Or?
We certainly can. That's,
yes. I would like to, a little information on P5, the Minnesota Land Trust, restoration or easement, the bus lane protection.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Ms. Prohaska.
Jane Prohaska, Minnesota Land Trust. We have three projects that have been mentioned in this list that's in front of you right now. As you know, we made five total proposals in different geographies, but essentially suggesting the same tool using conservation easements on private land. The proposals that are currently on the list, one is for the Westlands region in southeastern Minnesota, which runs from essentially Red Wing down the bluffs, down the Mississippi River toward the border. And that's our Bluffland Protection Program. The focus there when we presented was with the prairie proposals, and our focus is the goat prairies, the bluff prairies in that region. But of course, our conservation easements would be geared at a landowner's entire tract of land, and so that would include other uplands and forests and or trout streams or whatever else might be in that particular tract of land. The second proposal that was on the list was our proposal that was part of the Metro Corridors proposal originally, and those are also conservation easements in the greater metropolitan area. And in fact, by greater metropolitan area, we mean Chisago County, Asante County. We also have several projects on the Rum River in the general area you heard talked about previously.
Excuse me, if I may. Yes. I think Mr. Rawl was referring specifically to the first one you mentioned.
Okay, sorry about that.
It was the P5, yep.
Yep.
I mean, are all of those included in the that 690,000?
The P5 is the bluff one. The other two are additional proposals beyond the 690,000.
Well, the one that's still on the list for possible funding is the bluff one.
Actually, I think three of our proposals are still on the list. One is the Metro, and the third is the Shoreland Protection Program, which actually, to correct the record just briefly, the proposal was listed as a shoreline restoration project, but it really is a shoreline protection project.
So the three that you have on that are still in play, which one of those do you consider your highest priority?
three related comments. From a biodiversity standpoint, I think the highest biodiversity is in the Blufflands. The systems in the Blufflands are noted in the as having the greatest concentration of species of greatest conservation need under the State Wildlife Action Plan. No doubt about the Blufflands being high biodiversity. In terms of threat, and urgency, I would say the highest threat level is on our shoreline, and that's throughout the state, whether we're talking about lake shores or rivers or streams. In terms of development pressures, of course, the greater metro area has some of the greatest development pressure, although shoreline across the state, including some of our projects along the North Shore, which is part of our shoreline protection program, are still experiencing threat of development, even in a slow downturn of the market. In essence, they all have pluses and minuses, of course, and we would be delighted to consider a combination of those programs if that was something the council was willing to consider as well. The grand total for the three is about $2.3 million, just over that.
So on the Bluffland project, how far north do those prairie remnants go?
They go into Red Wing. They may go north of that, but we most of the projects we do are just north of Red Wing and then on down south.
Any further questions?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Wes.
When the P5 pulls out, we'll look at the administrative weather costs would be quite high at about $240,000, and really only $450,000 going into the easement purchase. And with that easement, looking at your proposal, it looks like there is not any public access allowed because of the private lands.
Two things. Our easements are open at the landowner's choice to hunting, but you're correct, they are not mandated to be open to the public. In terms of the administrative costs, Because of the way the formatting worked to get consistency among proposals, anything that didn't fall into the direct cost of purchasing the easement fell into other. And for us, a fair amount of that funding would be on a case-by-case, easement-by-easement basis to cover the long-term stewardship and monitoring of that easement. We do have, like Ducks Unlimited, a dedicated fund for the long-term stewardship and monitoring, and so on a project-by-project basis, we would set aside some money into that account, and that's why that particular, it sounds like it's administrative or other, but it really is directly geared to the long-term ability to defend that easement.
Any other questions, Wes?
Mr. Chair, but on the easement, on a private easement, the maintenance of that is totally a landowner's responsibility, and really it's just a matter of inspection that's the only other additional cost in protecting that easement.
Well, it is true that the land management is the landowner's responsibility, but the long-term easement management really is a bit more than just inspection. It includes the prevention of violations, which is in part a landowner outreach program, which includes a lot of landowner assistance in terms of answering questions. Most of our easements require management plans, which requires approval of that management plan. There are often issues of approvals that are required, so that you can't do certain things on the land without our approval, so the cost of managing that, so that we have a long-term perpetual easement that still has enough of the ability to deal with changing circumstances. And then, of course, another portion of that is set aside for any potential enforcement action. So it is a little bit more than just doing an annual inspection. It is maintaining all of those things in perpetuity.
What's the leverage you're estimating?
On this particular project, we've estimated a little less than 1-to-1, but that's a very conservative estimate. These are some working lands, so we're not sure we'll be able to get the deeply discounted prices that we sometimes do when we're purchasing easements. We do have some private money available in this portion of the state, although it's limited. Our historic average for easements acquired with public money has been 1-to-10 in terms of leverage. For every public dollar, we've been able to get $10 in other value, including donations of land, donations to our stewardship fund, and other private funding coming in. We underestimated here so that we can over-deliver.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much.
Rick? I'd like to hear from Audubon, Minnesota, on the restoration violations.
Is there someone here from Audubon? This, again, this is which number, Rick?
I think it's
That's 8. Oh,
good afternoon, everyone.
I am John Arnosky. I'm on Audubon's board, and I'm representing them. If they have any questions, my guess.
Mr. Chair, you have $1 million request, and this is all restoration, right? So there's not acquisitions.
Correct.
Is that correct?
Correct.
So if we did less, that would just mean less.
Fewer projects, fewer acres. That's correct, but it is a division.
Don, one of the questions I have about your project, and since the time that you presented this, I guess 2 weeks ago, I was talking to some people in the DNR who manage timber sale programs for the DNR, and we got talking about this project, and if I recall right, of the $1 million, approximately $800,000 was to attract people to come in to remove the woody biomass on site. And again, I may be wrong in the numbers, but roughly it was 4/5 of the project cost would be to pay loggers or whoever to come in and remove that material. Mm-hmm. And when I asked that question of the regional timber sale administrator for the area that we're talking about here, the question was about the strength of the market. In fact, do you need to pay loggers to come in to do this? Because obviously woody biomass is a very hot topic right now. There's an increasing demand, whether it's over energy through Laurentian or other projects that are being looked at, or down here in the metro through district heating or landscaping. And so could you comment a little bit about that? Because the response I got was that there's a pretty strong market in many areas of Minnesota, and that if you actually bid it out, you might even get a little bit of money in return for having someone to come and remove that woody biomass.
Right. Mr. Chairman, that's a good question, and there is actually what I would call a one-off test project that the DNR is running right now that is using the principles that it's somewhat different from the proposal, but it's basically using the principles of that to find out how the link can be made between the private sector and habitat restoration around wood biomass, as you're describing. And I have with me right here the results or preliminary results of 10 different projects that are happening right now with the one-time funding that was provided by the legislature 2 years ago. And what they found is that oftentimes the cost to remove the woody biomass was much less, as you're indicating, you know, that there was a strong interest in the woody biomass, and the cost to remove it was much less than projected. We have found instances where it might reach the level of zero. In other words, they would swap the woody biomass for the work. And the value of this project is bringing the expertise to bear to make those connections. So, for example, to give you an example, the DNR Forestry Division was working with DNR SNA to have some 14-inch diameter red and white pine removed from an SNA that was acquired called Zundel Falls, southeast Minnesota. And when timber markets were high a couple of years ago, forestry was sure we could just market these, because if they were located in a different part of the state, there's no question. They got zero bidders. They could not market the timber when timber prices were very high. This test project went in and, using kind of a habitat restoration framework, said, geez, it's going to cost us, here, I have that figure right here, they estimated $100,000 to have those trees removed on a straight contract basis. They put it up for bid, and because of the strength of the biomass market, the actual cost was $17,000. So there was a guess that the market would do the work, but when timber prices were high, they couldn't do it. Now timber prices are low, but labor prices are low as well. In other words, people are looking for work. And what happened because of this project is we were able to take maybe two different communities that don't communicate with each other, which is commercial logging contractors, habitat restoration people, SNA managers, and biomass markets, and plug those all together, and for a $17,000 payment, the work got done. Now, this project that Audubon is proposing is going to take the next step and not just do the woody biomass removal, but because the guidelines allow for up to 18 months of activity, to fund the first year follow-up work that is often necessary following that. It may be burning, it may be planting, it may be seeding, or follow-up invasive species removal, things of that nature, and that would be part of the fund. But to the extent that the market will be able to contribute a lot to this restoration, we intend to over-deliver, just like the previous testifier said. We've under-promised, and we expect to over-deliver based on strength of woody biomass market.
Any further questions?
I move to approve the Audubon F8 proposal at $555,000.
Bill, when you're ready, you could restate that so members.
The proposal moves to approve F8, the Audubon proposal, at $550,000.
Any discussion on that motion?
Mr. Chair, five years from now, what happens to the land? I mean, who's taking care of it? Who's responsible once you've done the restoration work? Stuff starts happening and things start growing again.
Right. In the test project, if you will, the one that I'm describing before, a committee got together to evaluate proposals. First off, if you look at the second page of the proposal, you'll see five bullet points in there that describe the criteria that would be necessary for a landowner to meet for the project to be accepted. And number one is dedicated conservation land. So we know it's land that is not going to be developed. It's in conservation ownership. Number two, the landowner has the track record, the wherewithal, and the intention. Oh, I'm sorry. Number two is they have a land management plan, a long-term land management plan that, A, requires a lot of woody biomass removal. We're not creating the desire. We're responding to what's out there. And number three, they have the wherewithal and the intention to follow up on what their management plan calls for to maintain the quality habitat that will help them restore. I think what we're really looking at here is pushing people over a threshold. There's been so much that has happened in terms of fire suppression, lack of logging and grazing and other things in some of these habitats, that we really have a completely different landscape that belongs there. And often the barrier for the landowner is, for example, with the DNR and this SNA, getting that plantation out of the way so that then they can manage it.
What happens to the land 5 years from now?
They will maintain it. And the landowner will maintain it.
And Don, if I may, just kind of in the spirit of the other questions about the locations, could you tell us a little bit about just geographically where are these projects?
There's a map that I distributed when I testified, and hopefully you have it in your packet. You at least have a black and white that was part of it. Those are the so-called shovel-ready projects that the partners that you see listed in the program have already brought forward as literally ready to go as soon as weather conditions, for example, permit. There are additional projects beyond that, and you can see that there's quite a number scattered both in the metropolitan area, particularly along river corridors, as it happens, and in the greater, that 75-mile circle, which is kind of the economic zone to operate around the biomass market. And that reaches up into Mille Lacs County, it reaches down into the Blufflands area, and there's quite a number of wildlife management areas that have been brought forward to us by the department as with plans ready for restoration, no means to accomplish it, the commitment and desire to maintain the habitat once it's there, and for instance, the Fort Brooks area is one where they're, that's one of the dots that you'll see there up in Mille Lacs County. That's one where they have a long-term plan to diversify an even-aged aspen stand, and that's one, Mike, where I'm actually thinking we might be able to arrange an even-up swap biomass for the work based on the preliminary discussions with this person. So the only project funds would be to fund the seedlings that they'd like to put in after some of the biomass is cleared to diversify that plant.
And just to clarify, these would all be on public land? All these projects would be on public land that are permanently protected?
We have said they would all be permanent protection in public or private lands because if you'd like to have it restricted to public, there's such a selection. We'd be very happy to do that, but for example, and this is perhaps why David has removed himself.
I'm so conflicted on this.
Yeah, all right. The TEPS program has provided some funding to the Bellwin Conservancy, which is a private education facility out on the St. Croix River. It's in the area of high conservation value identified on the County Biological Survey. They have a dedicated staff, and they do environmental education programs for all the City of St. Paul public school kids. So there's a tremendous public interface with this private property. It is dedicated to conservation. If you would like to restrict it and ask that we only spend it on public, all the other projects were done on public lands, and we could do that as well. We could say, okay, fine, we'll just take public lands.
So when you say it's restricted, it would be it's restricted to management? So that it's, you say it's dedicated to conservation. Is this private land dedicated to conservation through a permanent easement?
It is the ownership of a private conservancy. Maybe David could just provide facts on this. Can you explain what the conservancy
is? It's both owned by a nonprofit and protected by
the easement. Yeah, I'm just wondering if you could accept the friendly amendment and just restrict it to public lands.
I think you know, there are some private lands under the conservation easement, but I want to make sure we're not having any conflicts as well. So I would be okay with that.
We have a motion in front of us, members, to allocate $555,000 to the F8 project that would be restricted to public lands. Is there any further discussion on this motion?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Bob.
Yeah, I'm going to speak in opposition to the motion at this point. I think there's still a number of other proposals that I'd like to hear from.
Okay. Any other discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion does not prevail.
Mr. Chair,
Yes, Bob, I'm sorry.
I was hoping to, if we could, listen to Susan Schmidt from the Trust in Public Land.
Susan here?
She was here a second ago.
Went downstairs to talk about water.
Oh.
Well, maybe we could come back to her.
That's fine.
There's something
here.
Is there another one?
She's here.
Oh, great. Just in time. Welcome.
Chair and members, Chair and members, there are two proposals from TPL on our list. FTW8I, which is Metro Corridors project that Senator Anderson put forward, and then P6, which was on that one of the ones that Wayne had put forward, and I thought we could hear from the folks in TPL just briefly about those. The Metro Corridor project is $2 million, and then the T6 is at $800,000. So I guess we'll start off, Susan, we're down to $3 million here. What do we get for $500,000 in either one of these cases as a number?
Good afternoon and welcome.
Mr. Chair, members of the council, and Bob Schroeder. My name is Susan Schmidt. I'm state director for the Trust for Public Land, and I'm a little bit at a disadvantage because I haven't been here all day. So I'm going to turn to my colleague, Bob McGillivray, who works with me at the Trust for Public Land. And Bob, can you be smarter than I am?
Bob McGillivray, I will try. Your question is what kind of evil?
Yeah, if you didn't get the full amount, and I threw out a number of $500,000, what do we buy for? What do we get for that?
Well, we would have to look for money elsewhere. I believe it's P6, the WMA acquisition in Olmsted County, that we passed for $800,000. On that particular project, we anticipate a land value gift from the landowner of $800,000 already, so we would be getting it for half price. If we receive $500,000 for that, we would have to come up, we in the DNR, with $300,000 from somewhere else, and if we didn't, it might go away. The Metro Corridors proposal is in Chisago County. We've asked for $2 million. That is for 60 acres with over a mile of shoreline on a both North Lindstrom Lake and a very deep lake that's next to that called Bull Lake, and it has great high biodiversity. It's got a number of wetlands on it as well. That would be for 60 acres. There's some adjacent land that we would envision that would be part of the natural area that is already in public ownership. So the overall, and then there's another neighboring parcel that would cost some more. But we think that property is worth approximately $2.5 million. We think there would be a land value gift on that as well. With $500,000, we would have I think a difficult time coming up with the rest of the money to get to the level that we need.
And Mr. Chair, Bob, I understand on the Olmsted County property, and I'm asking this as a question to be sure that my facts are accurate, but it's roughly 200 acres in addition to the 500 acres that have already been acquired that could be turned into a WMA. But what a factor to consider on the 200 acres is, my understanding is that the City of Rochester may be interested in purchasing some existing WMAs from the DNR. And if they were to do that, then the DNR's interest in the 200 acres would go up. But that has not yet been settled, that issue. So my understanding is that this is not fully ripe yet, I guess is one way I would think about it. Am I correct about that?
It is my it is my understanding that the DNR is interested in the land, and there's no question about that. They are looking for funding to make it happen. There has been talk for a number of years about some sort of land swap that really hasn't moved very far. These land swaps between public ownerships can be quite difficult. So it's I think, difficult to say whether that will happen. The interest is there in this property. It's the question of coming up with the money for it.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you.
You know, I actually have a question.
Oh, David.
And this is maybe a question for the council as much as CPL, but if CPL is buying that land, it doesn't fall into the must be open for hunting and fishing, but if it's then subsequently transferred to the state, do we find ourselves in a position where it has to be open for hunting and fishing at that point, and how does it track?
Greg, I think that's a question for you.
Mr. Chairman, David, the constitutional provision does not distinguish between state ownership and non-state ownership.
Okay.
If it's acquired, it needs to be open unless otherwise provided by law.
Okay, thank you. So this, all of the land you're talking about would be open for hunting and fishing?
Mr. Chair, members, and Mr. Hartwell, this Trust for Public Land is in any particular land protection situation working not only with the landowner, but with the long-term land steward. And in this particular case, our Department of Natural Resources has said this land is a priority for WMA, Wildlife Management Area, and yes, it will be open.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you. Other project members that you would like to get additional information on? Darby?
Yeah, I'm wondering if there's a representative from Three Rivers.
This is the Lake Rebecca
project. Rebecca, the FTWNI.
Is there someone here from the... Good afternoon, welcome.
Mr. Chair,
state your name.
City members, thank you. Bo Carlson with Three Rivers Park District. And the question was regarding the Lake Rebecca Water Quality Improvement Project.
Correct. Excuse me, members, this is number...
Just WNI.
Got it. Thank you. Please proceed.
Just a little background. Three Rivers Park District is the regional park agency for suburban Hennepin County. We operate and manage roughly 27,000 acres of regional parkland. We're a natural resource-based organization and typically provide larger tracts of habitat land and lake water access, and that is the main scope of our agency and the types of things that we do. Lake Rebecca is a park reserve that's on the western border of Hennepin and Wright County, roughly along the Crow River in the town of Greenfield and Independence. Completely within the boundaries of that park is Lake Rebecca itself, which is roughly a 252-acre lake. This is a water quality improvement project for that lake that is essentially three different components. One is invasive species control dealing with curly-leaf pondweed. The second is some shoreline stabilization that's needed along the shores of the lake itself. And then third is a hypolimnetic alum treatment to improve water clarity. This particular lake is one of the premier musky lakes in the metropolitan area. And in fact, we work very closely with the DNR. They do a musky fish trap every spring, harvesting musky eggs that are then used for stocking program, the stocking program throughout the state of Minnesota for tiger muskies. So it's a very specific strain that this supports. Because of the nutrient loading of the lake and the turbidity in the water, it's reducing visibility, making predation very difficult for the large species predator fish like muskie and bass. And with the algae blooms we've had in the lake, we've had some oxygen depletion and die-off that is requiring this treatment at this time. So it is very definitely connected to the fisheries and the lake itself, improving the fishing quality of the lake itself.
You know, I'm looking at your proposal and I'm confused because the proposal on top asks for $450,000, yet the budget has $224,000 being requested. Can you help me clarify for me which number is correct or maybe none of the above?
Certainly, Mr. Chair. As the part of the Metro Regional Park System, we put allocations together representing all of our agencies. That was the 10 regional park agencies. And as we were trying to diminish our requests in order to fit into a recommendation that came out of the Fish and Wildlife Habitat Group, we all looked at trying to cut back on our project components in order to fit that budget. The true project budget is $450,000. We were going down to $225,000 in order to fit into the recommendation of the larger Fish and Wildlife stakeholder group.
So I guess that begs the question, what wouldn't be done if $225,000 was appropriated versus $450,000?
Certainly, Mr. Chair, what we would look at is the number one priority in this particular project is the alum treatment for the lake. The invasive species control is also a very important component. And the third piece, or the piece that more than likely would drop off, would be some of the shoreline stabilization that we would hold off or look at other opportunities that we could do internally or with other park district crews that we had at a later date.
Sir? Mr. Chair, I appreciate that. I guess I just comments to members. And Ellen has actually mentioned it earlier, and I feel equally strongly. You know, we're all of us are really concerned about the drop-off in hunting and fishing and participation even in the outdoors. And the key, I think everybody realizes, is really to get the kids started young. And I think one of the real benefits, this is clearly a fisheries improvement project, and that if we can provide the kind of water, and we can't do it everywhere, but at least there are places where we should clean that water up so that we can get young people out and actually can see down into the water more than an inch or two to that there is a crappie down there or whatever. And I think it really does. We have already committed money to some folks up north with some trout streams and so forth that is essentially reparation of the habitat, and I think this really fits that. And I would just urge us to fund this project. I think it is part of the. It's clearly a metro project. It helps us with some balance there. I would so move that we add that to our list.
And at what level, Darby?
I would fund it at where it is.
Which is?
450.
Okay, so we have a motion from Darby to recommend for allocation $450,000 in fiscal 10 to project FGW9I. Okay, Wayne.
Which county does this lake reside in?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner, it's Hennepin County.
Yes, Bill.
Mr. Chair, just a follow-up. Tell me more about the muskie.
You've
got to have a lot of time to fish muskie. the muskie eggs, that you're saying, is this the only place in Minnesota that they use there?
Mr. Chair, Senator, this is not the only place. This is one of the key places in one of the areas for this particular strain of tiger muskies. What the DNR does in a joint project or program with the park district, our water quality and wildlife staff works with the DNR. We have a public fish trap program where they actually catch the muskies in the lake, they harvest the eggs, and then they use those eggs for fingerlings that they use in stocking programs throughout the state of Minnesota. There's certainly a number of other locations that they do this type of program. This is the only one, at least in our district, that I'm aware of, and potentially in the metro area, there's very limited type of muskie habitat or location.
The source of revenue there fairly decent then, or not?
Mr. Chair, Senator, not at this point. It's certainly a public program hitting in what Member Nelson mentioned as far as getting people aware of tiger muskie. And aware of the opportunities to get out there and fish. And certainly when you pull out some of those 54-inch tiger muskies out of that lake, it invites a lot of people that are interested in getting out there and fishing on a regular basis.
Any further discussion? We have a motion on the table to recommend allocating $450,000 to FGW9I. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carries.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
I'd like to hear from the folks in Dakota County on FGW8L, This is the Dakota County Habitat Protection for $1 million.
Is there someone here from Dakota County?
Oh, yeah. One of the things that strikes me of interest in, among many things about this particular project is the amount of leverage. As I understand, Dakota County would put up $4.1 million to the $1 million that we would add, which is a pretty substantial return on invested capital.
Welcome. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the council. Al Singer, and I'm the Land Conservation Manager with Dakota County. Many of you know that Dakota County residents passed the first referendum in the state, generating $20 million for permanent land protection of both farmland with habitat as well as natural areas. We've been at this now since 2003. We've protected nearly 6,100 acres. These particular projects involve a mile and a half of the Cannon River, which is a state scenic river between Northfield and Cannon Falls. A piece of property adjacent to the Chug Lake Wildlife Management Area in the southwestern portion of the county. Chug Creek, which is an outlet of Chug Lake, which has a very high diversity of fish. Marcotte Lake in Invergrove Heights, perhaps it would be the project that would be closest to the state capital. It's a 50-foot deep lake that has water clarity down to 20 to 25 feet. And another project in Invergrove Heights as well. We have a significant landowner donation. We have federal money through the Federal Farmland Protection Program. We also have the county program as well. And so that's what we would be leveraging to protect about 470 acres. These would be permanent easements on private property.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Bob, please.
Can you tell us a little bit about the opportunities for fish, game, and wildlife habitat here? And also, can you tell us a little bit, obviously, the Vermilion River, I believe, is in Dakota County.
Correct.
And if there's any relationship to this project and that particular structure.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Schrader, we currently have a project that is partially funded through LCCMR and the Vermilion Watershed to do a comprehensive corridor plan along the Vermilion River that would integrate water quality, habitat, and recreation. And so that project is not going to be completed until the end of this year. And so purposely we have not put any acquisition projects into this program as a result of that. With regard to fishing, hunting, evening access, the one piece along the Cannon River would be a mile and a half of Cannon River frontage. People canoe and fish that river. It would be private land, and so there would be opportunity for the landowner and anybody else who would be invited to hunt on that piece of property. With regard to the wildlife management, there's 100 acres in adjacent to Chubb Lake Wildlife Management Area. It's a private easement. It's uncertain whether the landowner would allow hunting in this area, but it's an important aspect because it provides a refuge for the wildlife that would otherwise live in the wildlife management area in this portion of the county.
And Mr. Chair, Bob Singer, back to the issue of the match, if you were to receive, let's say, $500,000 rather than $1 million, is the match ratio still in place?
Mr. Chair and Councilmember Schroeder, the ratio would change a little bit. I think what we would end up doing is the amount of match funds would probably be about between a quarter and a half. So in other words, it would be down.
Now we're at, let's say, 4-1 roughly.
Correct.
So this would be 2-1.
And just on that point, could you explain the, you have listed on the proposal county and state funds and landowner donations. Can you describe the relative contribution of each, particularly state funds? And whose funds are those?
I'm trying to think, Mr. Chair. In the case of the Cannon River, it would be federal funds and county funds. In the case of
Chug Creek, it would be county funds and federal funds. It's possible that there could be some state funds that could be allocated to the Marcotte Lakes proposal, but that would be the only one that would have state funds available.
Rick, I'm sorry, yes. Mr. Chair, just to be clear, none of those properties are in any house districts. But Mr. Singer, when the voters voted in 2002 on this, there was a plan, and the plan identified priority areas that were for habitat and that. So these potential acquisitions would be based on that plan, which identified high priority areas.
Mr. Chair and Councilmember Representative Hansen, these projects are located both within the state-identified and the regionally-identified conservation corridors that have been the focus or the priority areas for all of the Metro Conservation Corridor projects. They also were identified through a very detailed conservation plan developed through the county involving 70 meetings that laid out this plan, and so they really align very well with both a statewide, a regional, and a county perspective in terms of conservation plans.
Rick? And is it correct the landowner also has to have a conservation plan?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen, we require every landowner project to provide a natural resource management plan or a stewardship plan. We also develop then a work plan that details what kinds of priorities and who's going to contribute what. The county actually contributes money toward restoration of buffers, will move fences. That's not even included in this particular proposal. That would all be at the county's expense.
Any further questions on this proposal? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr.
Chair.
Yes.
I'd like to make a motion that we fund this project at $1 million.
So we have a motion to fund FGW8L, which is the Dakota County part of the Metro Corridors project, at the requested amount of $1 million. Is there any further discussion on the motion?
Darby, yeah, just a question. Again, does it need to be the $4
million? Yeah, Mr. Chair, Darby, I think what I understood was that we lose the amount of leverage currently, roughly at 4-1. Anything below that might compromise that. So it's on that basis that I was suggesting the funding of the money.
David, do you have a question? Mm-hmm. Further questions or further comments, questions, discussion on this motion? Again, the motion would be to fund FGW8L at $1 million.
Less technical point, one area requests $1 million, the other requests $960,000.
Yeah, I think the total, if you go to the next page right at the top, you'll see the total in the first little bar. Further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. So, Beth, we are down now to $1.6 million.
Plus the question that was still out there about the small Knife River item, which was part of the previous decision.
Great.
The steelhead one.
Correct. Other projects that members would like to get more information about. Jim?
Yeah, I'd like to hear on W14. Is there anybody here from the trust? Oh, I'm sorry. Right in the Minnesota Valley.
W14. Now, are W14 and W13 basically the same, or help me out on this? Or the same proposals? No?
No. Okay. Competing organizations.
Both doing great work.
Welcome.
Good evening. Yeah, I'm Joe Podolka. I'm with Friends of Minnesota Valley. I'm the conservation project manager for Friends.
Could you just explain again,
yep.
Joe, what the...
Yep. We're, with this project, we're proposing to restore and have 657 acres on waterfowl production areas that are already waterfowl production areas. the counties are Sibley, Blue Earth County, Le Sueur, the South Central region of the state. And a lot of times with Fish and Wildlife, I don't want to speak for the Fish and Wildlife, but as you, they only have so much funding to restore these large tracts of land, and there's only so much funding, so they're going to, you know, do the larger wetlands or, you know, whatever they have funding for. And now there's a need to really restore all the smaller wetlands, the type 1, type 2 seasonal water wetlands, to really create that complex for these waterfowl productioners to really increase production on these lands. So with this funding, we would, all restoration will be breaking tile, blocking off ditches, installing water control structures, you know, you name it, to increase waterfowl production and restore the wetlands to get water back on the landscape.
So when you say, Mr. Pavelko, you're breaking tile, this is currently land owned and managed by the Fish and Wildlife Service?
Everything is owned and managed by the Fish and Wildlife
Service. And this is tilled right now?
No, there's grass on there, but there's wetlands that haven't been restored either. There's a shared tile line that maybe the tile line would go through a wetland to provide drainage for a farmer, and so you couldn't break it, but now we can replace that tile line with the funding and actually restore that wetland and still provide drainage for that farmer.
Yeah, Vice Chair. Part of the projects W13 and W14, are they closely associated in a geographical location?
The trust, I believe, if wants to come up, she can.
The projects in W13, which is a separate organization, are WPA lands that we have acquired, and it would be restoring on those lands that we have acquired, but eventually they become WPA Gold Medal Fish and Wildlife Service.
So there would be there's a few projects, like next to Perch Lake in Blue Earth County, where the trust actually bought property upstream of the WPA, and now that allows the Fish and Wildlife Service that they can actually restore the wetland now because the upstream neighbors aren't partners. So, it's a good partnership.
Oh, I'm sorry. Can you follow up on that?
Just summary. The W13 is an acquisition of 80 acres and a restoration of 1,055 acres, and the other is the restoration of 657 acres.
Yep. Bob?
Yeah, Mr. Chair. Ms. Loom, just to Representative Hansen's point, if you didn't get...
If you like, Ms. Loom, it's fine.
what's the acquisition cost for the 80 acres? What I'm getting at is if we wanted to direct these funds instead to the other activities rather than acquisition.
I would appreciate if you would do that.
Okay.
If given my brothers, if you ask, I would rather see you fund our refuge expansion project than this one, because I am more successful at finding other funds for the WPA acquisition. For example, we've got a NACA grant that we're hoping to get. So if I had my brothers, and you didn't exactly ask this question, but I'd rather see the money for the refuge expansion project.
Which one is that?
Yeah. FGW8H.
That's the one.
That is on our list. That's yes. $1.2 million.
The one that I spoke to earlier. Mm-hmm. It's more difficult to find those funds, if that helps at all. That's very difficult.
So let me ask you on W13, the acquisition and restoration. I think that part I was also asking about if we just focus the activity to the restoration and enhancement work, mm-hmm. your request of $414,000 would be what?
Of that, let me just do it this way. Of that, $505,000, $220,000 was acquisition. So what does that leave me with? I'm looking at the old math now.
$285,000.
Thank you. That's the answer.
Yeah. Okay. Which would put us in the small grant category if we were...
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Any further questions on that, on those projects? Other projects that council members would like to hear more information on? Bill?
Yeah, I'd like to have the W-12
Shoreline Acquisition Ducks Unlimited, John, come forward again, maybe give a little explanation about that exactly.
Good afternoon again, John. It is still afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Britton.
Just a real short synopsis of that.
Sure. What we're focused on there is, again, the Ducks Unlimited is focused on shallow lake improvement and protection projects. In some cases, let me back up, we do enhancement projects with water control structures and improve the ecology of the lakes. And then we also worry about the land around those lakes. We have a conservation easement aspect where we work with private landowners. In some cases, though, some land is for sale. And a conservation easement isn't a usable tool in those cases. Elsewhere, we need to actually buy some land to place the water control structure on the outlet. And the landowner's not interested in the easement, but they would look to sell the fee title to the land. And in most cases, the state of Minnesota would hold and manage those lands. So we've got a scalable project. There's tracts of land around the state on shallow lakes that have been for sale that have been offered to either the Fish and Wildlife Service or Ducks Unlimited or the DNR that we can pursue. We requested $900,000 in the contract where we had one larger tract for $600,000 that was for sale and several smaller tracts. So really, we've got a laundry list of possible acquisitions that could be pursued.
Mr. Chair, I'll give you my next question. Could you live with half of that?
Yeah, great.
We have some projects that would
Mr. Chairman, Senator, we'd be grateful for any funding that would still allow for the average acquisition to occur, which would be, I don't know, $100,000 in this day and age. So, yes.
Further questions or comments?
No. Thank you.
I guess with that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion for $450 for that particular W-12, I believe, is listed as.
Okay, so we have a motion to recommend appropriating $450,000 to W-12 shoreline, shallow lake shoreland acquisitions. Any discussion on that motion? Yes, Wayne.
Sure. Just one comment that I know how difficult it can be when you've got an entire wetland a complex can be taken care of by one water control structure, and quite often being able to purchase that one very small piece of land for a certain or higher price is so valuable, because it's the cost per acre of the restoration is so great. So I really highly recommend that you do this one.
I guess, John, if you don't mind, I do have a follow-up question on that. I may have missed it, but can you tell me with that $450,000, what are the targeted lakes, so I have a better sense of where you would be going?
Mr. Chairman, we've got several lakes around the state. Lake Moriah in Murray County comes to mind that we helped the DNR work on. Nearby Long Lake, also near there. Fish Lake, Stearns County, I believe. There's just a laundry list. And what we would do is coordinate with the other acquisition recommendations that are being made to the DNR and other partners, too, to make sure that we're not all, you know, looking at the same tracks.
And again, is the focus for any acquisition to be able to put a structure, a water control structure on it?
That's part of the need. At times when we get into a project, all of a sudden the land's for sale. That's an absolutely critical issue. We can't proceed without acquiring those tracks. But elsewhere, it's again, a shoreland protection and restoration project, too, that we're working to improve the lake, and all of a sudden there's a 40-acre or an 80-acre parcel for sale on the shoreline. Our conservation easement funding doesn't address those situations, so we would look to purchase those tracts.
And then again, kind of a quick question all along, who would hold the title to those properties that are purchased?
We would hold them temporarily, but transfer them to the Minnesota DNR or the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And they would be open to public hunting and fishing as per the agency that the whole process.
And just kind of to follow up on that, of 10 acquisitions that you might make, how many of those 10 would go to the Fish and Wildlife Service on average versus the DNR? Give me a sense of, related back to the whole question of hill payments.
Quite frankly, I think most of them would go to the DNR. Most of our shell lake work is done in partnership with the DNR. Most of the shell lakes we work on that are related to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service are already on one of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's properties. So.
We have a motion before us to recommend appropriating $450,000 to W-12 for shell lake shoreline acquisitions. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carries.
Well, I'm concerned not only about the metro area, but the southeast. We haven't done anything other than the South Stream. I think the land trust proposal for easement should be considered by us. I'd make a motion project number is D5 at $500,000.
So the motion is $500,000 allocated to P5. This is the southeast Bluffland project.
Mr. Chair, of course, I'd like to speak in favor of that. That's on my list.
Yeah. Any further discussion on that motion? Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
On FW12, Shell Lake, I'd like to hear, is there anybody here that can tell us about anything about the FW12 is Shell Lake Water District working together to get clear water. I know the problem they have is they have a lot of carp.
Zero bowl.
I voted for it, but I don't think it went. Wet register. I'm technology challenged. But anyway, I've been to that lake and I've seen what a mess it is. There is no longer any vegetation in the lake because the carp had it all. And in order to, it's right in the city of Elderly, and I think if we're going to spend money improving the water quality and habitat, fish habitat of that lake, they want to try to. I have two fish traps to catch carp and other fish, put the good fish back in the lake, take the bad fish and make fertilizer out of them. Unless they want to send them to Nebraska where they make carp burgers.
Is there someone there, someone in the audience who can speak to this project?
I've been looking. I don't see anyone.
Chair, one of the things I understood about this particular project was that they would be including creation of a 12-acre Main Street stormwater park. The word park is a highlight for me, and I just wondered.
I'm not including that in there. I'm asking for the remaining money. They wanted $277,000 for that, and I excluded that part out. So what I'm asking for is basically what we have left.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's going to be.
So just members reading the proposal, this the part that is not the stormwater park would install fish barriers at three locations on Fountain Lake.
That's the
part, Bob, that you were talking about. Yeah. To exclude carp and allow for effective carp control.
City of Elderly will take care of the rest of the problem.
Bill.
Mr. Chair, do you know if it, Bob, if it wrote no debt or poisons at all, yes at all?
I think they have at one time, but that's quite a while ago. My experience with the lake is Representative Krause used to live on it, and former Representative Dorman lives on it now. And both times I visited him, it was pretty scummy.
How big a lake?
I'm not sure. I do. Fairly good sized lake.
And so
bigger than any in Fairmont.
And just reading on, I mean, you know, we're talking about three barriers, and it's a pretty substantial cost. But the reason being is two of those would be electrical fish barriers, and then one would be a mechanical fish barrier.
That's the way I understand it.
It's certainly something that can take care of some of the void that we have in southern Minnesota.
Well, I wish we had someone here.
Yes, sir. The only concern I have about that is you talked about it with the folks who brought it in, and I'm not sure that they're realistic in terms of the phosphorus problem. You got an awful lot of phosphorus in the sediments, and I asked specifically how they were going to deal with that, because you can do all kinds of things in the watershed, but if you're already just overloaded with phosphorus. So I don't know. Do whatever you want to do, but that's just a concern that I've got whether the project can effectively be done at the degree to which we're going to run.
Bob, please.
Chairman, I don't believe there's a lot of farming on this lake anymore, and that's where the bulk of it comes from. I know we will take care of some of the things that are caused on the bottom of the lake by having a dying, decaying vegetation will be somewhat eliminated, and we will have normal vegetation still during this. So it's my understanding that we'll somewhat take care of the problem.
The number?
The number is FGW 12.
Yeah, I know that, but the number requested.
It's a little bit more than they have there.
Okay.
Is that a motion? Okay, so Bill, why don't you restate the motion?
Representing Gunther moves to fund Fish, Game, and Wildlife 12 at $655,000.
Yes, we have a motion before us for recommending appropriating $655,000 for the fish barrier only portion of this project. Is there any discussion on that motion? Hearing none. Oh, I'm sorry, Wayne.
What was the cost of the fish barrier itself? Is it that $655,000? I see it's initially at $966,000.
Bob, please.
It's slightly higher than that, Wayne. Thing was $277,000 that we got rid of.
So the stormwater park was around $280,000 to $290,000. Yeah. Further discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Members, we have allocated the fiscal 2010 appropriation.
Yes, really. I want to read the list of the COA under the 400, and I think we mostly did that already.
We did not. So the question is, revisit the Steelhead Association project. Because it falls below the $400,000 threshold that we were just talking about for the Conservation Partners Program.
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Bob, please.
I voted on the side of support of that, and I'd like to make a motion that we withdraw that amount and suggest that they be considered an applicant to the small grant program.
So we have a motion to withdraw the $320,000 appropriation that we had originally allocated and just withdrawing it or directing it to the small grants program?
I'm sorry, directing that particular project as a potential applicant to small grants.
Not directing the project, simply telling them
yes,
that they
are
considered right. Applying.
Right. Thank you.
Any further discussion on that motion? Again, that is FGW 18.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I noticed that when we went through this originally, we all put it under a pretty high priority. I would certainly hope that it would get that same priority when it gets through the small grant application project, and that we might have some say in how that gets funded.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, and Wayne, at that point, I'll just be honest with you, I didn't get a lot of confidence in the testimony about some of the issues regarding the protection elements of that particular of the land that they were dealing with. And I think there may just be a little more coaching, perhaps, that might be necessary for the applicants.
So members by...
The notion, the concept of steelhead in Minnesota is terrific. And I think it's something to help them. I think that's certainly worthy.
So members, by approving this motion, then we would free up $320,000, which by our own discussion then would prohibit an additional project, but we could recommend that being allocated to one of the existing projects that we have, because it is under $400,000. So the motion we have is to withdraw the recommendation for $320,000 to the Knife River project, FGW-18, and then request that they consider the small grant program for funding for this project. Is there any further discussion on that motion? Yes, Scott?
Would you be open to a friendly amendment to your motion that says that we'll remove the $320,000 from the Knife River project and add those dollars back into the DNR AMA program, which got chopped up pretty good this last go-around?
Sure. So the motion is amended to add the $320,000 to the AMA acquisition program.
Which is this item?
This one?
FTW-7.
Sorry, Beth, if we're moving too fast, we don't... Okay. Everyone's clear on the motion then? Is there any discussions on the motion then, again, to transfer the recommendation of the $320,000 from the Knife River project to the FGW-7, which is the AMA program? Further discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. So we have now... I don't know where we are. I haven't been watching the screen lately, but we're at zero.
We're
good.
While we're doing the calculation, I had asked for a little time. I just want to publicly thank Bill Becker for above and beyond the call of duty work on getting us to this point. He sends emails at 6 in the morning and 9 at night and weekends. He is a great government employee who doesn't believe in 40-hour work, and we have been very well served, and I'd like to round
it. Absolutely. Thank you, but it's for a good cause. I hope so. Members, we have before us now a list of projects that we've been working on for probably the last 8 hours. And again, going forward, what I would like to do is we have a motion on the table to adopt our recommendations with the appropriations we've indicated to give the direction to Bill and Greg and staff to come back to us on the 23rd of March with an appropriations bill that includes most projects, the allocations, and the appropriate rider language. So we're going back to the initial motion we have back at about 8:30 this morning.
I'd like a discussion just on the whether or not the legislators and the audience think that we have come up with a package that they can fit.
Good question. I'd like to hear from all four, please. Ellen?
Well, Mr. Chair, David, I appreciate that question. And as you know, I've been expressing some concerns along the way. And I'm sitting here thinking, you know, I'm not quite ready to approve this package today, personally. And I appreciate that everyone feels really good, and I don't want to spoil any good feelings that we have of making real progress here, and really a huge amount of great work that's been done. I'm still somewhat concerned about the overall package and whether it will be accepted and supported by the legislature as is. I think it's got a lot of merit to it, And we've had a good discussion today. I think that's been, you know, helped to get us to find some common ground on some things, which is really positive. But I know that I've heard from a lot of my colleagues, a lot of concerns in the last 48 hours about where we're headed. And I'm not sure, I guess what I would prefer to do, honestly, is to sit on this till our next meeting. And really, I just feel like I need to look at it a little more carefully and make sure that I feel that this is a fair and balanced package that I can get my colleagues to support. I guess I can't say that yet.
Bob? Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think it's a great question, but I'm not sure that Senator Anderson, or I certainly wouldn't have enough information to make a value judgment on that. And I'm trying to think to myself, what is it that we all would benefit from in order to make a better judgment? I mean, it's pretty hard for us to track as we're going along here, even with all our notes and so forth, to see where we land. And I also think, you know, we, I can't remember who it was that held up this map and said, you know, what it looks like for all of our projects on a statewide basis in the metro area. And so I guess my question to you, Mr. Chair, is I think we're scheduled to meet again next Monday. It's currently on our calendars.
Yes.
And so one of the thoughts I have is there a value? Because I worry about waiting until the 23rd to find out that we really have a lot more work to do. And I wonder if there's a capacity or the ability to, between now and next Monday, take what we have, share it amongst ourselves, amongst all the members, perhaps bring together the key components that would be interesting. How many acres? How many miles of shoreline? You know, where is everything located? How much to Rick's point, how much restoration? How much enhancement? How much prairie? How much wetland? How much forest land? Some of those key measures that I think might be of value for us either to modify or feel much better about. And I'm also thinking about Senator Anderson and the others, Representative Hansen and others, when it's time to sell it to their members. Those are metrics that I think are of value. So
just in response to that, I think that's a great idea. I think the challenge we run into is that we'll be meeting less than a week from now,
right?
Meeting Monday morning. We have one staff person who would have to pull this together, and Bill and I have talked about that. And you know, given the resources we have to work with to do that and to work on an appropriations bill, which is really what we need to get working on so that we have something before us on the 23rd, I just am not sure that that's possible. I mean, I think eventually it is. I don't think giving council members time to look at it over the weekend, let's say that means this Friday, there has to be all these projects and where they're located and enhance, restore, protect acres and values to each. I guess I'd defer to Bill, but
yeah.
I'm not sure it's possible.
I absolutely respect the fact that we're talking about a great deal of work, and I'm frankly trying to think to myself, what is the mechanism that we can use to not burden Mr. Becker much more than we already have, and take advantage of the expertise and I'm sure strong willingness of the folks that are currently on the list to help us out. So my thought would be that if we identified what are those six or eight key metrics that we'd want to know. So I just listed a handful of those. In an email to those folks that are on the list, ask them to respond to Mr. Becker in a organized fashion. I mean, I think we've all been amazed at how he was able to take all of our data and consolidate it as quickly as he was. So we would have a product that at least gives us a little more comfort. I guess I'm suggesting that we ask for some help from those folks that are currently on the list.
Wayne?
Mr. Chair, I know that that question was originally directed to our colleagues here in the room. However, I keep thinking we've spent quite a few hours here and at home, evenings, checking, going through all these proposals. And the ones we have here and what we've adopted, so looking at adopted, all meet the constitutional purpose for which we're here for. I don't think that there's a way you can make this perfect. Not this time? That, thank goodness, that's where we have 24 more tries at this. And maybe we'll have a perfect after that. But considering how this process went, I really feel like we put our heart and soul into it, and we left the politics out of it. And granted, not everybody's going to get everything they want, so I know I didn't. I'm sure everybody else did. However, I think for the first go-around, for something that is pretty unique, I think we did a very good job. And I am very pleased to go ahead and vote on this package.
So I'd like to hear from other legislators. Bill?
Well, you know, the experience I have in the legislature, not to read the, you know, the folks on the Senate side, I guess, I'm not sure where it's at either. I am very, very sure of one thing for sure, is that we definitely have to do this right. And Wayne's very right. I mean, there's been a lot of work done in this. It's going to be something new that's coming forward. There's no question about it. I'll do whatever I can to help push that through on the Senate side, but in light of the trouble we're having with the $150,000 bill we're dealing with already here, you got to know there's going to be some bumps in the road here. And like it or not, there is politics involved from this point forward, and that's what we're talking about right now. So I guess I would like to move forward with it. I just can't understand where we'd be changing anything. I guess I don't understand where we would. So,
I think I'm going to make a comment about the requesters that want money. I think they probably move pretty fast to bring the revised proposal, so we can get that information to us, and we modify, I think, almost every one of the ones. There's a few of them we have modified, but there's been some changes. So I think if the requesters come back to us with what we've done, so we know what we've done in terms of the impacts on them, I think that could be done, and that could be done relatively easily because they want the money. So they can move pretty fast. I can get back to Bill on the ability of the package as it is, without looking at that. I think I've commented before that it's heavy on acquisition. We have tilt consequences. I think according to the statewide plan, there are some areas that are not met relating to the impact of sprawl in urbanizing areas. There has been some effort on that at the end, but it's a relatively small component. So I think there will be difficulty in passing the proposal as it is, but I think if we can get more, have a light of day on it for a week, and get the proposal polished based on the actions we've done, that can help clarify where these actual projects are in terms of their ability to get to meet the need of the Constitution and the statute.
Well, I agree with Wayne. Nothing's perfect when the first time you do it, the second, the third, and the 24th time will be much better. However, I think when you look at today, we've made it much more geographically balanced. I think that was one of the big concerns I heard from people. I think we've preserved an industry today by putting the $20 million in the forest land up north. I think that's a very important thing to look at the job consequences that this bill has. And I've got a lot of coaching from Representative Hansen, and he said that he's concentrating on producing jobs is what we do today, and I think we've done a lot of that. I think I know that even that little Albert Lee job, they say they're going to have 22 workers on it. So I think in total, I think it could be better, but I think we can get this one done.
Darby?
Well, you know, I think about the times that I've made a decision, a quick decision, and then the next day wished, oh my word, why didn't I think it through a little better? I've lost a bunch of money in the market because I would hope that we would sort of the equivalent of sleep on it, get as much information as we can, and we come back and then make the final so that we're really sure we really do need to do this right. And I think it wouldn't hurt to come back at it having additional information about locations and so forth. I think that's a reasonable thing for us to...
Wes?
I think our first responsibility is that the people of the state of Minnesota, the Constitution Amendment was formed, it took us 10 years to do that. It went through the scrutiny and the process of the legislative process. We had through the House and the Senate and through the vote of the people. The vote of the people was 57% right around that neighborhood. And it behooves us as a council to, number one, do the most judicial job that we can do to spend the money properly. And some of these spendings are in the Mercedes-Benz order, and some of them are in the Chevy truck order. And maybe we have to spend a couple of the Mercedes in the metro area, and I think the balance is necessary. But it shouldn't be a project of bringing the vacant homes to the particular legislative district. I think we have to look at the whole state and what's best for the state, what's best for the future of the conservation projects within the state of Minnesota. And I think the presenters and the stakeholders that are represented have done an outstanding job. They brought the projects, they've unified the state as far as bringing the request forward, and it's a difficult job, and I think the first cut is a good cut. I think it's a balanced cut, and we might have to look at these and sleep on it overnight, as Darby said, and come back with some adjustments to it. But remember, the people have spoken, and this is who we represent.
Rick?
Mr. Chair, the rules we've adopted under Mace would say that you cannot question the vote of a member. And I think that that just occurred in terms of saying that people are bringing things back to their district. And I'd like to know where there is one example where a project is coming back to somebody's district. There is none. And I think there is under the rules of the House and the Senate, I believe in the Senate as well, you cannot question the vote of a member. Is that right, Counsel?
Yes,
that's right. Thank you.
Well, members, we have a motion that we, on the table before us from the beginning of the day, about 8:30, that was Bill, that was your motion, to adopt this. Now, we can do two things. We can move on that motion, or we could table that motion. And again, it would not be to, we're going to have an appropriations bill that we're going to be looking at on the 23rd. And so I guess I want to make sure everyone is understanding, if we come back next Monday on the 16th, what in fact the objective of that meeting would be. Is it simply, is it information we can look at via email, with maps, whatever? Is it information we want to open up everything again at the next meeting? I want to make sure the members are clear what in fact we would be doing a week from today.
Dave, for me personally, I'd like to see some of the detail of how much money and what geographic area, how much is going into enhancement versus protection versus restoration. Personally, I'd love to see cost per acre, but I don't think it's critical at this point. And I'd like to see that before I vote on a complete package. And so for me today, if you want me to vote on a complete package, I would vote no, simply to put off the decision. I don't want to necessarily come back and renegotiate everything that's in here and go through what we went through today. We may need to look at this and say, my God, we've made a mistake. We need to pare back on something and add something else. But I consider my position, at least, we may need to look at tweaking, but we're not looking at whole bill changes.
Bob?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, to David's point, you may recall many meetings ago, we talked about an asset allocation model. Protection, restoration, and enhancement, prairies, wetlands, and forests. And I think that we can take would not be very difficult, I think, to collect the data and to fill the boxes of that asset allocation model. And within each box, we could note the counties where that activity, so for example, within the protection of prairie box, we'd know what counties, how much money of the amount we have available to us, and the measurement, if it were, prairie, it's acres, but if it were a case of street stream or so forth, it would be, you know, miles, miles. So I would suggest that that might be the visual that certainly would give me a little bit of comfort.
Let me suggest something, members. So we do have a motion on the table, and if the author of that motion would be willing to table that, what we do need is we need at least some preliminary approval to give Bill and staff to move ahead to draft an appropriations bill. It's not binding us to anything, but to giving them direction based on our discussion today. So, Bill, if you'd be willing to table your initial motion made at about 8:30 this morning to adopt these projects and recommendations pending this meeting a week from today, and that we would then take up a separate motion that would preliminarily, it would give direction to staff to go ahead and draft the appropriations bill and all the rider language consistent with what our discussions were today.
Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to do that, but I didn't make that motion this morning.
It's been a long
from this corner, I think. I'm not sure exactly where.
I think it was you.
It was
you. I made a motion to... Sure, I'll go ahead and do that.
I have to admit, we've checked three people in this room taking notes, and we checked all three of them, and none of them have the actual maker of the motion. I have you nearest the motion.
So with that motion table, then, I guess I would like the council, someone to entertain a motion to give direction or approval for staff to go ahead and draft an appropriations bill.
I would move that we give staff direction based on the preliminary work we've done today to draft an appropriations bill for us to look at on the 23rd.
So we have a motion to do that. Ellen?
Well, Mr. Chair, maybe we should add to that direction somehow to collect as much information as is humanly possible for the staff that we have, and I don't know what that will look like, but you want to separate those?
I guess I don't know if we need a motion for what you're describing. I think that was implicit, maybe not explicit, that if we're talking about the same thing, Bill would be going back to all the projects, the proposers, and getting that information along the lines of this discussion, and that would be the basis for our discussion a week from today, and then the appropriations bill would come forward 2 weeks from today.
Well, Bill hasn't hand up, but I would just add, I think that should be part of this motion, that staff should be directed to try to compile some comprehensive descriptive information for us about this.
Well, and I will do that. I just wanted the council members to know that we have in the draft of the bill authorization for an accomplishment plan, and I think if we do this under the rubric of the accomplishment plan, collect the data, I think we can kill two birds with one stone. And I was going to be going back tomorrow for an accomplishment plan anyway. It'll accelerate the return, how fast they have to get it back to us. But I think it's a doable thing.
Bill?
One more thing. I brought this up earlier on in one of the meetings was in regards to leverage money. I wonder if we can have some kind of a line from the players that are going to be calling in as to how much we're actually leveraging with these dollars. So that'd be important.
That's a really good suggestion. I like that. So there was a suggestion to amend the motion, Dave.
That's great.
And that's accepted. So we have a motion then to give direction to staff to draft an appropriation bill as well as pull together the information we've been talking about to get better information about acres, categories, geographic location, leveraging, and the list goes on. Any further discussion on that motion? Wayne.
I'm just trying to get my head on what we are going to accomplish. It seems like every project we looked at had a majority vote in order to be placed within the total package. So now we're going to take and look at it and tweak them again. Maybe some won't be funded after we've said that project did get a majority vote for it, or in some won't. Are we going to go back and redo everything we've just done, or is it our plan to just tweak the dollar amount? I'm unsure about where we're going.
I guess, Wayne, in response to your question, I'm not sure anyone knows if anything would be done. I think it's a matter of getting that information just up. Looking at additional data against the project to make sure we're comfortable moving forward. It very well could be, and I would assume we put a lot of time into this, that there would have to be some fairly significant errors in our judgment to make significant changes to what we've been talking about for the last, I guess, month and a half. That would be my personal interpretation.
Rick? It took a majority to put projects in, and it takes a supermajority to send it onto the legislature.
And Mr. Chair, it would be, you know, I've tried to have as many conversations with legislators in the last couple of days about this as possible, and it would be my intention if I had that sort of overall descriptive, you know, here's what the package looks like, to do that again. And I, you know, obviously the council can take it or leave it as advice, but I appreciate that some members really are concerned about wanting to know that this will is likely to receive some legislative support. I think that's important. And I heard a lot of comments today like, you know, this money is not just for some Minnesotans, it's for all Minnesotans. Things like that. And there's a lot of questions. So I would try to take this back and get as much feedback as possible as I can and then bring that to the council next week. So I'm hoping that would be helpful information.
Is there any further discussion on that motion? Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Motion to adjourn.
I am so moved.
Motion to adjourn. Hearing none. All those in favor.
I got a question. Listen, when you get to this thing on this small grant, you're looking at $400,000. You get 10 people or 10 projects, you're gonna take the whole thing. The small grant program has got to be down smaller. $4 million. But if you have
Thank you.
We're getting it done.